When we were last together, the board selected August 27th for Tall Glass of Water work session. And Robin Payne has worked very hard to assemble some information for us.
All right, good morning. In your packet, this front page has a number of links to it. So after the meeting, we'll send everybody out this packet in digital format. So if you want to visit any of the architects that we've talked to or any of the parks that we've referenced, you can just hit that link and go right to it. So, first hour this morning, we're going to focus on the RV possibilities, the income with the RVs, and we need to zero in on the activities and the amenities that we've talked about. So the first two pages are, first three pages, are information about the architects that we've talked to. So the first two are Alicia Kerwan and, good morning. Alicia was recommended by North Carolina State Parks. She is the one that was the architect and the project manager for Goose Creek. So here's some of her. These are all pictures of Goose Creek. But if you go to visit her website, she has pictures of other projects that she's worked on. Second architect that we've talked to is Cadis Design, and that's Chris Horner, also recommended by North Carolina State Parks. He's done Jones State Park and Raven Rock State Park, which are, of course, a little bit further west of Greenville. But both have worked in wooded sites. And so when we look at the North Carolina State Parks, they have a formula that they follow. And they're outdoor-oriented, they're low-impact usually. But each one of them has a difference with, their amenities, their activities, and the different types of lodging options that they offer. That's sort of a nature-based design package. Then there's another group with campground design, and that is these RV resorts. So there's RV resorts, and that's the next page. RV resorts can be, they've got so many more amenities. They've got billiard rooms and indoor swimming pools and outdoor swimming pools and clubhouses and ballrooms, and they're fully packed. Then there's also the high luxury RVs that are very manicured. The focus is not on outdoor education or outdoor activities. The focus is on golfing and so what we did was, this is the comparison of the North Carolina State Parks. So we worked on primitive cabins, they have camper cabins, and then they have, their drive-in RVs. And drive-in RVs are towables, but then they're also the drive-aways. Then we looked at, and this is the second group I talked about, the RV campgrounds that have, it's all-inclusive. You don't have to leave. You've got laundry facilities. You've got even storage for your RVs if you want. So what we're looking to do is define what slot Tall Glass of Water fits into. And so what your vision is, so that we can take that to these planners and they can help us get a quote for. We can ask them to provide a quote on just helping us with the RV installation. We can ask them for a quote on specifying, the water, the sewer, the electric. They can take it as far as we want them to be involved. But we want them, of course, to compare apples to apples, each one that we talk to. But we also want to make sure that we're giving them what you all want to see happen at the park. And each person that we talked to said, we need to know first what you're doing throughout the park. They may not be involved in the education center, but they would like to know what the whole scope is. So, and now that I'm sitting here looking at this, I forgot to mention this guy. This company, RV Park Consulting, Rich Stockwell, he's in the western part of the United States, but he travels all over. And his focus is mostly private campgrounds, higher end, you know, they're $68, $75, $80 a night RV campgrounds. But he also works with groups just as a supervisor to help you get your plan together, look at it, make sure we're not forgetting anything. So there's also that service available. He is in the same category as the gentleman who developed the plan for Scotch Hall. And I'm forgetting his name right now, but he died in 2017. But it's that same focus of RV design. So we've got, again, like, you know, similar to the state park, which is nature-based. They have swimming, paddling, some have horseback riding, they all focus on hiking. So we've got those, and then we've got right here, which is, what is this, Forest Lake Preserve. That's in the central part of the North Carolina. And then we've got Enfield Rocky Mount, which is pretty upper price range. But what they're focusing on is they're just off 95. And it's really not too much of a resort. It's more of a parking lot. But it's all those people going back and forth with all these that need a place to pull in for the night. So that's the niche that they fill. And then Twin Lakes, which is in Chocowinity, their focus is on the waterways. So everybody who has a boat or just wants to be on all those canals, that's their focus. So
the state parks that I've been to, we tent camp. Electricity is wonderful, especially in the bathhouses. We've been to one that didn't have any electricity in the, as far as plugs in the bathhouses. That's a must, especially when you're tent camping. The best one that we have been to had a combination of tent camping and RV parking.
Right.
And it was all in the same circle. Which made it nice because we have friends that have their camper and then we tent camp.
So it's combined.
Yes, it was a combination.
Okay, so flip the page where you see this layout. It's layout of the state and the graph. So across the top are the different categories things that we put prices on. So we've got camper cabins. Camper cabins are right in the middle. They are what we saw at Goose Creek. They have electric, heating, and air conditioning. Then there is a luxury cabin, which was $107 a night, but there's only one park that offers that. That's four rooms. And then there is the primitive cabin, which is just one room, two sets of bunk beds. So I listed camper cabin, that's 55. So everything that's circled in red is pretty much the average price that we saw across all of the parks that we looked at. Primitive cabin, they have one at Umstead State Park in Raleigh. Okay, so tenting, there's group camping. $42 a night was the average for...
It is expensive. I'm paying $23. It's more than State Park in October.
Group tents was like 30 people. So church groups come, and it's what it has is a separate picnic area with a grill, you know, but it's a bigger space. So, and then they had like a vault privy that was close enough to the camper space, group camping. So then the next category is tent or small RV, water and electric. And yeah, $23. So it's somebody that's got one of those pull behind bubble units, or they call them all sorts of things. Somebody's just got a pop-up tent or camper. Those are easy to fit in those spaces. You can have your tent if you want. The H1 obviously has a grill space. So 23 a night. Then the RV back-ins. And again, the prices vary, but it was about $30. Sometimes if they're closer to the water, you know, it went up a few dollars, but not too much. And then the pull-throughs, I listed at 35, because again, there was some fluctuation depending on the location, and a site that had more woods around it, you know, it was more private, it added a few more dollars to the cost. And then we saw in horses, or four horses, while a number of them allowed for horseback riding, there was only one that I saw that you could bring in your horse and stay there. But and appropriately so, they had it off to the side a little bit because horses being flies.
Did they actually have stalls or paddocks for these horses?
No, it was extra room to tie up the horses.
You have to bring your own camper and trailer.
No, I get that, but you really can't keep a horse tied up on a short road, or you can't keep them in a trailer for 24 hours.
Well, I mean, some people do, but
stock up.
If you go ahead and choose to put in the horse barn, if you want to have horseback riding, there's three different ways to look at it. People could board their horses here. If this is the horse site, they can pay to do that. Mm-hmm. That's a good income potential. If you're going to have horses to ride for people, if you lease the space to a business to ride the horses.
And people that don't have horses aren't familiar. Going down 95, there's different places that advertise if you want to stay the night over.
Okay.
You can leave your horses in their barn, and it's like a horse hotel, even though it's not, it's
sure.
Just a barn. You rent that stall for the night, and you go stay at a hotel, and you come back the next day to get the horse.
Okay.
But you're responsible for feeding it, haying it, and whatever more before you leave it there. And that's all up down.
It's an option here.
Mm-hmm.
When I think about the logistics of the property that we have, mm-hmm. hearing what you said about the different types, it seems like we have the potential for most of those sites. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the potential of Highway 87 coming through,
right.
And so you get the people who are on their way to the beach, on your way to whatever, that's going to be a significant draw,
right.
And especially this public rest stop with the public beach. But you also, when you think of the Scotch Hall, the people coming in on the high end, I don't know what their appetite is for that, but that could be a significant draw, mm-hmm. close enough to mm-hmm. you know, people to stay and shuttle back and forth to there if they have an appetite for it.
Right.
But then when you talk, the piece I really like, and from when I first saw the property, when Steve and I went down, that ridge area, the Big Tree Ridge, is a beautiful place for, you know, small cabins or tent camping. Yeah. I mean, that's really neat.
What space was that?
Right about where you got your name.
Here?
No.
Yeah. Back up for a
yeah, right in there.
Yeah, okay. Right in there. And the trees and the under brushes is not strong because at times, and it
okay.
has a nice canopy. I mean, it's beautiful in there.
So that's potential for?
I thought it was nice for tent camping or for cabins, small cabins if we were to consider that.
Actually, Robin, it was more Where the road goes to, it was more like.
Yes, that right on that high ridge, on that high ridge. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, and another thing is, I'll say that, we're fortunate with my horses, you know, Martin Community College, their equestrian department is one of the best around in the state. They're associated with us here in Bertie. And then one other thing, a little insight, you know, the town of Windsor at their little campground, where they just put in bathrooms and laundry and all that kind of thing, and, you know, their experience could tell us a lot about what to expect for that kind of drive-in. People who are working in the area oftentimes camp for a week, 2 weeks a month.
Right, right. And they're at $20 a night, right? It's pretty.
They're pretty full.
Right.
At Goose Creek, the superintendent shared with us that he already thinks they made a mistake. They're still finishing construction. Their bathhouse is not air conditioned.
Oh.
I mean, it's beautiful inside. It's got the high ceilings, the exposed beams, but he's really afraid it's going to be so humid, so hot.
Well, I guess, yeah, and the other problems too is that even though they have the high ceilings, that makes it even that much worse because they have tongue groove, 1-6 tongue groove up there. There's going to be moisture retraction, mold, mildew, and they don't have any fans in there either.
And he really thinks we'd be well advised if we're going to do a bathhouse to do it a little bit more on the upscale side. So it really is comfortable when people have to go back to the tent. At least they had a good experience, you know, as they get ready for the evening.
And their cabins that they had too. You had one bedroom, then a living room. The mini split was in the bedroom. There was no air ventilation coming into the living room, so they have a mold issue in there also. And what they should have done was build a half wall like you would in a studio and leave that part out so the air conditioning can blow in there at that time. So there are certain things that just that were designed that they should have picked up on when they were designing this one.
And my understanding from these people who do a lot of that high-end kind of camping, right? That there's a network, it's almost like AAA, that they plot out and, you know, and suggest different kinds of places for them if you're going to the beach or that's going down to the east. And when you hook in with those folks, I mean, they pretty much assure you of, you know, significant traffic.
I've been keeping a list of all those places. Somebody, right, if they have an RV, they're going to Encore Travel or something. And Encore, they plug in what they want to do on this trip, and all of those sites pop up. And then there's three or four more other service, marketing groups, reservation groups.
Yeah. I like the different parts of it, the RV parking, the trails. But I also, to me, that grabs people from outside of this area. But I would love to see something for the people in Bertie, such as what I've been hearing, the fishing, a pavilion, you know, something, it should be a park, something for everyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have to achieve that balance. Yeah, it would be easy to design this super duper RV campground, but we have to make sure that the community focus of what, you know, you got the park for the first time,
right,
you know, is play, you know, the priority. So in the RV, while there's so many possibilities, it's just a really good income potential. So what I've circled in red are really just average prices, and they reflect the level of visitation or activities of the state parks. So in my calculations, you know, we can go up, you know. If you want to offer AC in the shower units or whatever, you know, we can up by a couple dollars. So let's go back to pricing in a second, and let's look at layout now, all right? And these are on sticky backs, so it doesn't, we can change it. Now, for RVs, this is what we've just been talking about, possibilities. This section right here is about 7 acres. This plan is 1 inch equals 100 feet. So, you know, we've got a lot of room to do something with. So these pull through RVs, because they're closer, I don't think we'd be able to get over that bridge area, you know, with those big RVs to come out to here. You could have then the smaller the RVs that back in here. This is about a 12-acre parcel. You could do your horse RV sites here if they're closest to the barn. Camper cabins could be here. And your tents and small towables up and through here. And primitive tenting in the back. Primitive tenting, you know, these people, they want to be remote. They want to be up right next to the RV section. People who are paddling, whether it's a canoe or a kayak, they want to pull up here, they can reserve a space and camp over. You know, so again, you can have tent and small towables back here. You can have a group tent spot on the other side of the road. So if you've gone over the ponds right here, and just before you get out to the big field, it would be off to the left. Camper cabins in the middle of where the motorized vehicles are and where the tents are is nice, because it's that buffer. You know, tenting people don't usually want to be up against the bigger RVs.
Since we mentioned Interstate 87, do we want to define an area potentially for a welcome center and kind of reserve that, so that we can say to DOT or other potential partners, here's where we think the concept for a welcome center might be, especially if it's up near the entrance?
I think we do, Scott, because at least the two meetings that I went to and we discussed with them what we were doing with this property, and that we had a direct access to 17, right? Mm-hmm. And would they be willing to help support that in their plan of build out? And they clearly said yes. They said if we were to tell them what our intention is to have an access directly to that, then they would support that in their plan, in their build plan. And they talk about how it's paid and who pays what. But if we're going to use that direct access, that comes right across that field, right?
So I was curious,
what are we going to do with the easement issues up front? And there are easement issues. And again, our attorney's here. You want to address that, since we are talking about that central area? If you're not prepared to define, just let us know this. We're talking about the easement areas up front.
And where is that, Jonathan? That, because we were understanding that there was a direct access from 17 across that field to this property. That kills.
Right.
This yellow, we've been moving this around, is our visitor center.
Right. Okay, so if this doesn't show the whole area that I would need, because I can't see 17, but do you have one that has a little bit more?
Up in that corner.
Okay, this is a little bit better. Okay. Is there a way to get it up there? Okay. All right, so our property is located here.
The blue.
Yeah, right, this room. Okay, so when this property was cut out of the larger portions here, there was an easement reserved for it to come down here to Ball Gray, and also an easement that refers to going along this path up to an old residence, which is approximately right here. I think you might be able to see some of the foundations. And then basically make a dog leg straight up, straight over to, well, here's 17, straight over to 17. This is Sawyer property here. The Sawyers, in their chain of title, there's nothing mentioned in the Sawyers' chain of title when they granted any easement rights. So the two issues that I see in terms of easement rights that would need to be worked out with the Sawyers are, as far as 17 goes, I mean, they own the property across which this easement runs. It's a very old description of the easement. Their property ends right up here, so it's really not all that clear from the language of the easement whether the easement actually crosses their property or goes on up to the end of their property and does the dog leg. But it's entirely possible that it does cross. across their property if it crosses where that house, that old house is located.
Yeah, John, where that old house is located, I know where it is. There's a road that leads into that house.
Right.
So is that the easement?
It crosses Sawyer property.
Right.
So in the Sawyer's tour, in our title search, we can't find anywhere where they ever signed off on easement across their property. The easement appears when the non-Sawyer property, all the Bell property, was being divided up. And when it was being divided up, that's when it appears the Sawyers hadn't signed anything. So, I reached out to Mike Neal, who is the forester who does handles their land.
They're managing the timber.
Right. And he's spoken to them, and at least I think he's spoken to them. Last time I talked to Mike, it's been a number of months, but he indicated a willingness that they would be willing to donate and get a tax break for any sort of either widening of the easement here or going across their property up here. See, anybody in a chain of title, any landowner, I can sell you if the highway's here and I own this and I sell you this and I say, I'll give you an easement to the highway. Well, if I describe my easement as going across someone else's property, it doesn't necessarily give you a perfect easement. Everybody then uses the road for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 100 years. Now, there are some implied easement rights that have developed over time for the owners of this piece. And you could, in a court of law, you could prove, potentially even prove an easement by prior use, a prescriptive easement where if you use an access openly, adversely, hostilely, under color of title, like you know you can use it, you could arguably prove that you've got some easement rights. But that takes a whole court proceeding, and it's much better just to work it out and try to establish it. So that portion there is, like I say, that needs to be worked out, and then also the easement just describes a path. It doesn't really give a clear. Certainly doesn't give the width of what I think the county is going to want to have here. So any additional working out would be the width of that easement. The path is, if you look at a tax map, the path looks like it's, off the edge of the of our tract. But it runs right along the edge. And again, it's between all these tracts. The county clearly has the right to run up and down and get access to Ball Gray. But as far as, at least there's a potential that at least half that path, if not all of it, is on Sawyer land. So that would be, the county actually has a strip of land right here that it owns. So there's no question the county has the authority to, if it wanted to, they could build a road right on that strip. And never talk to the Sawyers, never touch the Sawyers. But if you want to keep the path, if you want to keep the road where the path currently is, and you want to work with that and expand it, then some discussions would need to be had with the Sawyers.
What do you need from us to proceed forward to have those discussions with the Sawyers? Is we need a motion on this? Because I think we need to move forward so we don't wait like we have done with the 10.5 acres and proceedingly keep moving forward with this thing.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be appropriate.
Well, my thought is, why would anybody come off of an interstate to travel down through the fields on a decent path? It would need to be to go to a welcome center. I mean, anybody staying at the facility would visit the welcome center and all that good stuff. But I can't see anybody just stopping in and going through a field to get there, not having easy access to it.
I see your point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just...
What's the pleasure of the board?
Well, let me say this. Since they would be willing to discuss for a tax break access across their property, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then could we in that discussion talk about some kind of direct access across their property, right? Directly across, not down, further down that road, but directly across.
I think the more openings we have to get to our property, the better off we are. Well, that's just me.
If they're willing to that discussion, then it would go straight in, and that way you'd be a little bit more accessible.
I wish we knew where 87 was going to be. That would certainly help.
Right.
Well, it's going to be on that road, because they got to go across the bridge.
What kind of tax break are they talking, about a one-time thing, or are they talking about some kind of ongoing thing?
No, it sounds to me like a one-time thing. They would look at the width of what they're giving, they would figure up basically the acreage that's in that right-of-way, and they get an appraiser to appraise it, get a value on it, and then say, hey, county, we're gifting you this easement worth this much, and then they report that.
I think more access to our property, the better off we are. And if we can come across there, that'd be great, coming from 17. If we're coming down the opposite way, that's fine too. There's always point of contention. Once this gets going and this opens up, and more traffic, it's more apt, it's going to be paved, the whole nine yards, and move from there.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to do that, it needs to be plenty.
Because
you've got to look at emergency vehicles coming and going too, the possibility of.
That's right.
And the way you're set up right now, mm-hmm. if an ambulance had to come out of there, there's an RV going in, somebody's in a mess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times.
And like I said, the more traffic that's going to be going up with DOT, it's going to be more out of pay.
And this is something that the landowners here need to be clear on. A lot of times when people talk about easements and right-of-ways through farms and farm paths and all that around here, they're talking about a little path that somebody goes down every now and then. They need to understand that this is going to potentially, I guess we need to define how wide it's going to be, and they need to understand this could be a lot.
And the more options we can offer DOT where a paved path needs to go, the better off we're going to be. Then they can make a selection where they want to put it.
I believe we need to go ahead on the motion because you cannot plan on somebody else's property.
You got it.
So we need to talk to them and then we need to plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, sir. You want to hear a motion? Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Megan.
I move that we talk with the Sawyers in reference to the property or easement.
So can you give me some direction in terms of the width of the easement?
I think 60 foot is what's mandatory.
That's what we're talking about with DOT.
60. Being 60 foot DOT, which would it be? That way it gives us access to have DOT be able to pave, okay? Because of some of the things in the future that could be happening here, it gives a huge option here. And if you want to ask for 90 foot, you could ask for 90 foot. But 60 foot is usually the bare minimum. Unless you find out differently. Whatever the minimum is what we need to ask for, and maybe a few feet extra.
Right. Well, the minimum for a state maintained road, I guess is what we need to.
Exactly. And I think it's 60 feet. Okay.
Right. And this would also include the running and maintenance of utilities.
Yep.
So let's put that in there.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to deal. I mean, fortunately, like I say, the initial feedback was they were willing to work with the county. I think you're going to have to deal with them any way you look at it because you're dealing with an 80-year-old description of an easement that cuts across some location. Even if we felt like the location went around the Sawyer's property, it still runs along the edge of their property, and you're going to want to define the width. That's one of the key things that I think you need to do. He's going to require some surveying, and you don't want to rest on what's on the books right now, the way it's described. And plus, like you say, now you can take what, and you're going to be able to go ahead and have that direct access. So
yeah, let me ask a question.
Anyway, look at it. You got to do it.
Yeah.
So you're talking
coming across from 17 there, coming across the field, and also coming back the opposite way. If we get easement on both directions, I think the more easements we can get to the piece of property, then it becomes more easily for DOT to select if DOT is involved in the future of which direction they would come from because of 87, because of what could be happening in the future.
So you're talking about this way and this way.
Yeah, right. Both ways.
And that road, Jonathan, that's already there up to that old house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Seems to me I'm like a perfect back entrance.
That's right.
Coming off the existing 87. I mean, existing 17. Yep. And it's already there.
Yep.
And it goes right up to the house. It's used all the time.
Yep.
And that's where the curb cut is. Is there any sort of curb cut here? You know, where
traffic.
It's a small path, ain't it?
Ron?
Yeah, you can get back there if you want to fish on Salmon Creek. You can go right up there because Salmon Creek's over to the left.
So I know traffic traveling south on 17 can get off and come in here.
Right.
But I don't know, I don't know if it can here, but still.
But the opposite direction can.
What's that?
There's two when you're coming from, if you're traveling from north to south, there are two turns.
Okay.
Right in that area.
Okay. Yeah.
So I say we go for both, see what we work out at.
And you know, again, you got all the easement rights and even a strip here, but down, even down here, we might as well go ahead and take care of this too and make it clear width. Because you've got a strip, but I don't even know if that strip's wide, as wide as you want to have public access, DOT maintain. So I would basically handle this with here, and here. Make sure that it's wide enough. 60.
Okay. It's 60. 50 feet is minimum. 60 is what we need.
Yeah. Okay.
Because they're going to want easements on both sides for ditching or whatever it may be.
Right.
But I think we make the motion. Ms. Baysmore's made the motion. But we talk about easements from both directions and see how that pans out. And I'll second that.
I'm sure that they may value it high, but it, you know, Scott and I even talked about it, about a year ago when Mike Neal was saying with the county, he was asking if the county, we're talking, you know, I don't really care what they value that. Frankly, if they want to, I don't think it's their appraiser that's going to have to stand behind his appraisal as to what they value with their gifting. So,
okay, we have a motion and a proper second. Is there any more discussion by commissioners? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion moves forward.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Karen, before we lose sight, I know we're talking about, you know, RV and camping, campground, yeah, but I don't want to lose sight of what Commissioner Baysmore said about, you know, not just planning for other people outside of our citizenry coming in to use this. What I see mostly now is what people outside of the county would come to do. Primarily. I mean, some camping, but primarily. And I think we all know our community pretty well. We need to be in the early stages planning for something that citizens can use and that they put value on early in this process. If we don't, because we're spending their money, I think there are going to be some issues for us, and I just want to I don't want us to lose sight of that, because when I talk to people about it, and I talk to them about camping, I talk to them about all this kind of thing, they say yeah. But when I say things like, gee, if we had an amphitheater out there for public entertainment, then they say, oh yeah, you know, those kinds of things light up big time.
I think the first thing on the agenda should be restrooms.
Oh yeah.
I thought we were talking about the girls.
They got restrooms out there.
I think restrooms.
You specify the restrooms after you go where you want the activity.
Yeah. Excuse me. We have citizens that live in Marietta all their life. I would love to hear what their input.
People in Mary Hill, especially people that are retiring, with nothing else better to do but go fishing and do recreational things. And we have to go to Edenton or anything we want to do. Right. And right now, I'm very disturbed with Scotch Hall Reserve. All that fancy stuff over there, and we can't even touch it. We don't even know how to go in there. I don't know what it's all about. And they go over there, have fun. They got restaurants over there, whatever. And we just sitting there just looking at them, have fun in our neighborhood. And we have nothing.
The restaurants are open to the public. Yeah. And very good food. Yes.
Scotch Hall Reserve?
Yes.
We don't know this.
Oh, yeah. It's open to the public.
We do not know this.
You can go rent a jet ski and a pontoon boat.
See, we don't know this. And my thing is fishing. I have about 7 little old ladies. We go fishing every day. And we don't have anywhere to go fishing but Edenton.
Have you tried fishing here yet?
There's no fish out there.
You're right about Scotch Hall, and a lot of people don't know. They don't know that there's a public restaurant. They don't know that there's a pool, a swimming pool that
$5 a day or something.
Yeah, you can get a membership to it. You can go spaces. And they now have a boat dock area where there is good fishing off that because it's right down the creek. You know, and I've seen people fish out there, and they're residents, so I don't know if they're open to anybody, but good fishing over there.
They changed it. They changed where you're going to go in by the church.
That's right.
And because I was going in there one day, went to the opposite side where the sewer plant was at. They'd already shut it down. Right. Couldn't get it in.
Right.
Now I was trying to figure out how to get over to the other side. And that didn't, you know. And then I did that when they went private to public. And finally, when that new management took over, when I found out they had gone public. And they were wanting to build a shed and a restaurant in there to get the general public to go in there. So yeah, there has been no publicity on their part as far as advertising to get it out to the general public. Okay. Every once in a while you see something on Facebook, and I think Steve told us the other day that property is up for sale, or is it not?
It is.
It is up for sale now. So I don't know what the differences are going to be from, because it seems like every management group that comes in there, they change something. Who's the guy that was there wrong to get his name out? That really got involved with the county commissioners about different things, and then they ended up.
Mark Monashie?
Yes, yeah. And then they ended up Mark. He made everything public, opened it up to the general public. He started shooting all this Facebook stuff out there, websites, the whole nine yards, but yet, people don't understand that Bertie County does not have broadband and we're computer deficient, okay? And a lot of people don't know how to use the computer system here in Bertie County. My mother would be one, okay? So in the circumstances, it wasn't getting out there. And he had conversation about it, how to get this information out there, advertise. We have the same issues here trying to get our information out there. But again, if they do sell it, I don't know what the changes would be once they sell it.
And the restaurant up there that they call the Shed is a really nice restaurant. They have a patio area out back, and it's available to be rented for events, church events, for weddings, for all kinds of things.
Exactly.
And the restaurant is a nice-sized restaurant. And it's really
very affordable, too.
Yeah, very affordable.
Yeah.
But the outside area is really nice. People looking for a wedding or a family reunion or outside place, it's kind of nice.
I was
expecting
you that.
And they've changed management. I don't have time for it.
Four or five times.
I don't have time.
Yeah, I can give up with it.
And anyhow.
Are we kind of going to need to know this right-of-way thing is going to shake out before we can make any real solid plan on how these places are laid out?
I don't
really.
Let's see.
Well,
I'm sure that they will think for that, yes. And I would think for the larger RVs, but for the smaller, I don't think it matters, does it? And for, if we're talking about community use, let's review what we had, our ideas so far. In red were the different picnic shelters throughout the property, small and large. If it's just a family or a group of people or a church group coming, they can use one of the shelters. We have the music pavilion here. We have the nature center here. And we've, as an idea, put in a canteen, a store. Folks are down on the beach. I mean, even if they wanted to buy bait,
or water.
Sandwiches, pardon me?
Running out of water. And they want to buy some more, stuff like that.
So maybe putting it close to the nature center to try to encourage movement through, that space. And if you have, groups, or you're having a concert, you'd be close to the concessions there. Tents, we can put tents around here. Commissioner Wesson suggested here. I lost my sticky. I have a note for that. We could have a special event barn.
When we had the beach day, can you point out where parking was out on that map?
Right here.
Right there. Okay. Where would parking be then for the public beach if we're going to put things? We've got to be concerned about that, because as we start putting these different things in, parking is going to become a
necessity.
Right. But first, we need to define what your activities are. Mm-hmm. And then we'll work in the numbers and the layout for the parking, the roads, where the bathrooms are.
Well, you mentioned something when you said in the vet center that I think is an excellent idea. Over in Martin County, I just went to one about a month ago. The Middies had its meeting at a place out in the middle of nowhere, off Highway 64. That's a place, and I mean, it's, that's what it is. They have horses and stuff, but it's an event center. Houses probably, they must have had 150 people in there. And it was two different pieces to it combined. And I asked the guy, I said, well, I never knew this was here. And he said, yeah, we've been here about 3 years. And he says, we are booked all the way through the summer.
So is it private or public?
It's public. I mean, these people own it, but it's open, available to the public.
But it's not a county facility.
No, it's not a county facility. They built that on their own. There was a place where you could board your horses for years, mm-hmm. and they decided to build an event center on that property.
Where is that going again?
If you go...
Because when I was in Florida, we would travel 95 to New York, Connecticut, places
this
like that.
This is Martin County, off 64. But the way we came to it was not on 64. The back way is... if you go through Williamston and make that right where the old belts used to be,
right.
And that road goes all the way out mm-hmm. to 64, it crosses 64 there somewhere.
Right.
That's the way we went to it. Yeah. But this vibe, it's an old, you know, rustic kind of place. They have great bathrooms, to your point. And he said, man, this is my bathroom. And it was kind of flexible. You could move things around it. The area in between was the cooking area with this huge grill and,
Well, because of the financial part side of all of this, I do think we need to look out for our citizens first and put in those things that will help them have a wonderful time down at the beach or have that concert or that event center. And then as finances become available, we could scope out and end with that large RV park. When I go to campgrounds, I see more tents and pull-alongs than I do those $100,000 campers.
Whenever you all want us to be,
I have a little bit of all. Because we're looking at that as our income.
Yeah. That's how I look at it.
And we would be bad to help you up.
Right. It doesn't have to be an RV park with a little bit of fishing. Mm-hmm. It can be just a little bit.
Right.
All in the balance. But you're absolutely right. You don't want any resident to feel like, whoa, whose place is this?
It just needs to be planned where we're not painting ourselves into a corner. Where we can grow and not all of a sudden. We should have put this here right now in the way of that.
If we think about all this and start pricing out some things, is that really impacted by what happens up here?
I think that needs to... we've already made a motion for Jonathan to move forward. We need to do this as quick as possible. I think that needs to be number one on the list, getting that done, us planning and all that. Now, just a little insight. I was looking through the computer, and, we want to say the word amphitheater, but I think we're going a little bit bigger because of the type of money it costs. But they make these stages that are on tractor trailer, okay? The trailer itself, and what it does, it expands up with roof line, the lights come down the whole 9 yards, and they're about $100,000 or less. Some are used, some of them are, you can rent them, you can do all these different things. Something that is mobile like that, that we could put, what you're talking about, have people come out for concerts, people in Berkshire County come out for concerts and things like that, and then we could hook a tractor to it and pull it out of there, okay, if we need to. Till we get to the point of being more permanent.
They had them in Greenville, right down on the river, on that, what's the area in Greenville on the water, right?
Commons.
Down Commons.
The Commons, right down there. And they had a couple hooked together.
There you go.
Right? So it's expandable. Mm-hmm. That's right. They were on a trailer. They're pretty wide.
These are the same width of a flatbed tractor trailer, which is going to be 10 foot, okay? And then if you have the expandables, because they show two of them attached, okay? Where you back your side, and then you got a 20-foot stage, the roof lines up, you got sides, you got the lighting, I mean, it looked as professional as you would if you went anywhere. I mean, because quite frankly, if we can do it that way and leave the term amphitheater, because when I started pulling up amphitheater, it was showing this whole huge thing. But we talked about this portable deal, it looked fancy, it looked first class, the whole nine yards.
That's something you could sell down the road too.
Right.
So that you
know. Oh, absolutely.
You had it in the area where you could do just basic seating on the ground almost.
Should we get to the point where
we
put
something
permanent?
In Greenville, yeah, right down in the common area, right on the river, right downtown.
Well, maybe we could, I could just go ahead and start pricing out these different options.
Well, and apropos of what the vice chairman mentioned about not planning ourselves or building ourselves into a corner, I think one of our outcomes today is to try to come up with a list of all of the different amenities and potential site offerings so that when we bring in some possible architects, we can give them that list, that scope of work. We can give them a copy of the map and the aerial photography and let them come in. And like we did on the library cooperative extension, you interviewed four different architects and they came in with a lot of different ideas, but you found the one that just seemed to get your eyes. Well, I think given the beauty of the county's property, you're going to have folks fighting to be your architect, to be your landscape designer. Because like when we went to Goose Creek, that's just cut over swampland where they put in the campground. With the forested areas, the county has just absolutely gorgeous terrain for putting in the camping, the hiking trails, the horseback trails, whatever.
That's natural beauty. And my thing is that whatever we do, you know, in my opinion, Bertie County is lacking the entertainment factor for our citizens. Mm-hmm. And if we can set something up for the entertainment factor for our citizens, the beach, the musical end of it, this, that, the other, I think we're moving in the right direction.
That's just picnic areas. I mean, where do you really go to picnic in Bertie County?
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of the little picnic areas, the larger ones, the groups, smaller ones, that ridge for primitive camping, or maybe you only did one or two. Yeah. A little bit of everything is kind of a really nice way to do it. They should be expanded. But
so if we have
a restroom to support all of it,
along the line of what you were saying, Scott, if we get a vision of what we ultimately want to do, and then maybe a list of priorities about how we should progress toward that point sometime later. Is that what we're doing?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
Because we would also then use that for grant applications and other funding possibilities to show we have a plan.
I was able to have a conversation with the chair of the Golden Leaves Foundation. He's a commissioner from somewhere. I have his business card. But anyways, when I told him about our plan, and I thanked him for all the support the Golden Leaf has given Bertie County, but when I was telling him about this project, he raised his eyebrows. So I'm hoping down the road. Yes, in a good way. I'm hoping down the road that conversation will pan out. We'll get some money out of Golden Leaf.
So yeah, along the lines of what I just said, what are we looking at?
Well, all right.
Yeah.
So we're hearing a yes for a music pavilion. We're going to price out some different options.
You can't forget, along the music pavilion, we have to have a dressing room.
Yes, of course.
Okay. I mean, for the musicians, they like to train.
I don't interrupt, but I think the first thing you're going to have to do, somebody's going to have to do, is even though we're talking about music pavilions and all this pavilion, is we got to get someone to come in and tell us how much land we're going to lose over the next 10 years so you're going to know where to put all this stuff. Or either have someone come in and tell us we've got to put jetties out that will stop the erosion, or because just in the time that we have owned it, we have lost a lot of property that, as Dr. Riggs says, let the beach feed itself. But you can't keep feeding itself and you build a pavilion and 5 years down the road your pavilion's falling over.
I thought it was going to have a mobile.
It is. That's right.
I guess I was getting at anything else that you're planning on building close to the water, if there's anything.
Well, that conversation's been started with CAMA.
Well, it's kind of sort of been started, but it needs a whole lot more teeth in, I mean.
Well, anything that we build on that, you know, anywhere close to that cliff area, as I'm calling it, okay, you're going to have compaction. You're going to have that as permanent. That's the reason I'm so big on the portable stages and things of that nature, the tractor trailer base, because as it starts to gradually do what it does, or a storm could come in and take part of it out. He showed me a picture where 50 feet of cliff was taken out by the last hurricane that came in on a piece of property in Coleraine, I think. And that's the reason I think that if we stay, because they're so first class looking when they're up, we stay to the point where we can move as we're presenting these things, that these issues come up, and along that beachfront, we're not putting something permanent, because then we'd be wasting taxpayers' money if something caves in. Or the engineer says, listen, you know, I did a compaction test versus now, not with a Category 3 hurricane coming in like Isabel that takes out the beachfront up 40 or 50 feet, and yes, the amphitheater caved in. That's the reason I'm talking about that being something that's movable, mobile, and we can slide back, move to a different area, whatever. And I think that makes the most sense.
When we talk about the cameras, let's remember that the head camera guy, Steve Trout, lives right here in this community, and is a really good guy. You know Steve, right? Steve Trout?
Steve's point, though, right down at Coleraine Beach, they built a jetty, and they gained land. Their beach is now absolutely huge, where the water used to come up underneath the restaurant. It's way out.
So jetty is part of our to-do exploratory is researching what can be done in terms of the jetties and all.
I think that's just a that cliff. I live in the rock. It can stay like stable for 50 years and have a hurricane and you lose 25 feet. And it can be stable for 100 years until you. It's, I don't think you can predict that. I think you just have to be prepared for what can possibly happen.
So we can research those options at the same time that we're working on all those other options.
As we view what we want in the park, I would love to hear from the youngest. Vaughn and Dominique.
Not to put you on the spot.
They really have great ideas. And I would just like to hear what the young
I think you all are hitting the nail on the head when you say not only having the RV park, but having some local entertainment. I think the amphitheater or the portable stage, mobile stage, that you can take away. I think that's excellent. Some type of park or pavilion would be great, especially those of us who have little babies, little children. But just having a plan, and like you said, starting with something that caters to our local citizens, and then of course planning it such that you can come back later and add on and make it bigger and better and have a little bit of everything, like you said.
There's also a segment of the public that's really ready to see this place start generating some money if it's possible. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think lots of ideas have come up. It can generate money.
That's why I think that event center, they would get people into the property faster than anything else you could do.
The event center or event barn is what I'm calling it here. It could be a myriad of different things. It could be a craft fair. It could be a wedding. It could be...
That's something that can be used for multiple purposes.
People are always looking for places to hold events. Always, because we don't have any out
scatters. Especially in this county. Mm-hmm. Sure.
And, the horse barn kept popping up just because we're so close to the Martin County Arena, the Bob Martin Center and all the horses. And here I am in Williamston, and I don't know of any other place that people can...
If I can just comment on that, since when I came up here, we were heavily involved in the horse industry. You know, Bob Martin Horse Center is probably one of the best centers and event areas that I have ever been to. Okay? It is underutilized. When the national championships were coming to North Carolina, which my daughter rode in, okay? And this is a true story. I rented the center over there because it's going to be held indoors because there's echoing in there, okay? I talked to the manager that was running the place at that time, his exact words, it was back in 2003, I think, is what it was, okay? I said, you know, why aren't we having high-end horse shows? Hunter jumpers, things that attract 2,000 and 3,000 riders at a pop, okay? And he says, and I said, matter of fact, the national championships are set for North Carolina. It looks like they're going to be in Asheville at the Ag Center in Asheville. I said, did you even know anything about it? He goes, yeah, I did. But my friend runs the Asheville one, and it's outside of Asheville. It's not in Asheville. So I don't want to make that mistake where somebody says, okay, well, all this. He said, but my friend, and he's my friend, and I just didn't go for it. I said, you know how many millions of dollars that you just shorted the counties around here? Because the amount of people, you have 110 riders that are coming in, and the amount of money that is spent, and if you want to talk about it, somebody will say, well, there's not enough hotels and this, that, and the other. Well, check Culpeper, Virginia, where the national championships have been held several times. They have one motel in Culpeper, Virginia. We would stay 30 miles from there in Orange, I think it was Orange County, Virginia, or something like that, and drive 30 miles a day to the national championships for her to ride in the championships.
Sure.
So distance is not an issue.
Yeah, the problem about parking and about parks then is that that state's money, and it's not very well incentive for local folks to get involved in trying to make some profit out of it. But let me tell you this, because now that I'm a trustee of Martin Community College, they are looking. One of our top priorities is Bertie County, an expansion of activity in Bertie County. It's one of our top projects. And that means willingness to spend some money in Bertie County, whether that's on this place they have now or some other project. And if I can tell you, if this were something, a part of that, you'd have a real good discussion with them about putting some money in it.
Well, I can tell you this, you would have overflow. And overflow doesn't matter. Overflow will go 20 miles. Easily.
John, it's 11 o'clock. How far do we need to get today on this vision of what we ultimately want and the priorities and the timetable?
I think what we're doing right now until we get ready to, Ms. Robin here decides that we've got enough information and she can move forward.
Well, I'm hearing that we're all good with the picnic shelters. We need to research what we can do to maintain the beach area. We can look at the different music pavilion pricing options. We can look at styles for an event barn, a horse activity. If we could spend a few minutes real quick though, and y'all can research this later, you know, if we run out of time, but I did a quick pricing on if we stuck, or if we went with 6 camper cabins, 24 primitive campsites, you know, on down the line, 12 horse sites, I chose 24 RV back in and 24 of the pull throughs.
And that's the last page of your handout, right?
Yeah.
Which next one?
Separated on.
Three. Excuse me.
You know, that's $250,000. And that's with some pretty, those are North Carolina State Park camp prices. And I would guess that you would give RT residents a discount on, you know, whatever. So
these things happen, how we operate it. Do we hire somebody to oversee this?
I think that we can jump into that next section then. You have different options. The county can hire somebody to be the steward of the project, live on site. You know, hire somebody that comes back
or somebody that lives here already.
Yeah, we have a citizen that's reached out to me. I'm not out if anybody else, but he's very much interested in this project and wants to be a part of this project.
Well, I think now that we're moving towards zero, we've picked the priorities, we can start pricing out, then we can sift through it even more deeply, and at that time come up with different options for what your management is going to be. Okay. Let's see, next though, Okay, so as
we've already discussed the easements.
Okay. The income potential, we've talked about this. All right, so you can take a look at that later. We can go back to that. Handicap access options, Steve, Donna. People getting down to the water. Did y'all want to talk about these? Either one of you? There is a motorized handicap unit that goes down on the track to the beach. There is the mobile mat, and these mobile mats, there's six or seven different types, and they're heavy traction on them. The rain doesn't bother them or anything. Some of them are heavy duty, they stay in place. They're easily traveled on a wheelchair. They're easy to walk on. That is an option. And there is one of the mats that is ADA compliant. So, and they're used for a number of different applications. So, then a third option is the traditional wood rail and ramp that would go down to the beach that would have similar to what they have in Windsor, and that is the concreted, slatted, the holes, the hog mat layout. So these are three different options that we can look at to get handicap access down to the water.
And Windsor achieved that with an awful lot of grant money through CAMA and some other sources. So while that may be the most expensive, there may actually be some real opportunity there for us to have something that's stable and, you know, because that one, I like that it's got handrails.
Yes.
Yeah, the rubber mat, to me, just looks like a slip and slide, mm-hmm. even though I'm sure it has traction. But
what about emergency vehicles getting down there? Is that going to be wide enough for?
Well, I'm thinking if you put this off to the side, the emergency vehicles could still have a wide path like we have now, but I don't think you'd have to really put that off to the left or the right.
Because it may be somebody in a wheelchair, but it may be somebody simply that needs a handrail to steady themselves to walk.
Well, if you asphalt the path down there, wide enough, and it blocked off of vehicular traffic, unless you needed to get a rescue squad down there. Couldn't that be a handicap at the asphalt?
I don't think CAMA would allow that.
You got to have handrails.
Probably
put
a handrail somewhere. Yeah, but I mean, if you got asphalt in the road,
then we'd really need to check with CAMA on that.
They'll allow anything up to 75 foot from the high water mark.
That's a pretty steep incline, though, isn't
it?
Yeah. For a wheelchair.
Say again.
Especially coming back up.
It's a pretty steep incline for a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Trying to push somebody back up that.
No matter what you put there, though, I mean, the incline is deep.
You're right about that.
Well, when talk to an engineer, we need to see what the grade is, what that total weight length is, and then what we're talking about. Because if we do any kind of a ramp,
it'll be a certain amount of inches per foot anyhow.
And, right. And well, that's well, you might get less inclined to do it further back.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, that's
kind of like MTU going further into the field.
Yeah. Well, Cesar, we need to talk to CAMA first and then work out these different options. But the preference is?
Most economical.
Okay. What did you say, I'm sorry? Which one?
Most economical one.
Yes.
Unless it's what Scott's in, unless there's some money out there available for something different.
Well, let's talk to Windsor too about how they got theirs done because that was the CAMA dollars.
Yeah, exactly. Now we got to this point. Who's going to work CAMA? Would that be Steve Biggs, I would think?
I mean, I'd be more glad to work with him.
Okay, I would think.
No, I would want to be involved.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, certainly. Yeah. No problem. And the other thing you need to think about too, and Robin and I and Donna have talked about this, and Anthony, when it gets to the war. You know, someone that's in a wheelchair, what do you want then? Do you want...
Yeah, one of those mats are great for that.
Well, but again, you got to stay 75, even with the mat, you got to stay 75 foot away from the high water mark. 75 foot. That's the reason, like, when you go to Jeanette's Pier, it doesn't go all the way to the water. It stops way back. So you need to think, as Commissioner Hackett said a while ago, we don't want to paint ourselves into a corner. If we build something like they've got here in town, then when you get to the bottom of it, do you want it big enough that you can have four or five wheelchairs where people can just sit there and look out over the water, or do you want, stairs or steps so that people can also use it that are not wheelchairs and walk down? Or, just be thinking about what you want there too.
Well, and so part of our canon discussions then are the jetties, or what we can do to retain that beach area. We can include in that conversation, where's that 75-foot mark?
Right.
That changes.
It would be really nice.
Yeah.
I'm thinking to put in a vault privy bathroom down there, as opposed to doing the rental units. But it depends on where that 75-foot mark is. And then coming off of that conversation with CAMA, price out, look at the options for handicap access going down that hill.
Let me say, when I think about bathrooms, I'm many guests, like I've been to some of the fairly major golf tournaments, they don't use the little porta johns anymore. They use portable bathrooms that are the length of this thing and with stalls and just like a regular bathroom. But they're portable, and they're not extremely expensive. We just bought one for a six-stall shower for under $100,000. I think it was around $80,000. That's six stalls. That's a few models and wheels and everything.
They're not plumbed, then. They're not plumbed. They don't have plumbing. They do have plumbing.
They do have plumbing. Yeah.
You hook that up to it.
You attach up to it. Yeah, but I mean, they have them at all the golf tournaments now, and they are huge. I mean, all on wheels, you just pull them in and put them anywhere you want, move them around.
The main thing we decided when we're doing certain items that we have people that are going to be looking at these things, so things just don't sit out there like the easements and things of that nature. It gets done, and we keep moving forward.
Now that we've got. All right, we have a consensus on the major activities, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now we can move forward, start investigating. Are we ready to move on to...
Choan versus Alpamar?
Choan versus Alpamar. No, I didn't have a picture for that. And this is just so that all of our verbiage is connecting, or it's all the same. Tall glass of water. Is that body of water there, the Albemarle, or is it the Chowan?
It's the Albemarle. According to North Carolina Marine Fisheries, it's the Albemarle.
According to hydrology reports, it is the Chowan River. According to archaeological, the maps and the research that our historians are doing, through the First Colony Foundation, the maps they're looking at say the Albemarle starts at Salmon Creek, where Salmon Creek comes into the water. Everything above is Chowan, everything below is Albemarle.
So we would be the Albemarle?
We would be the Chowan.
Chowan. Yeah.
The channel mark is out there that runs east of Salmon Creek have a CR recognition, which stands for Chowan River. Once you pass Salmon Creek, probably a half mile or so is the first AS that you'll run into.
Going back towards Columbia,
correct.
One thought is, as we've been trying to market and describe the Bertie Beach, my fear is if we call it the Chowan River, it sounds like Chowan County.
Yes,
and even if it's not accurate, I think the Albemarle is
accurate. Absolutely.
But again, that needs to be
the largest. I've always thought it was Albemarle, and I always told people it was Albemarle.
I thought that big thing, we had the best waterways, and this is where the Albemarle and Chowan meets.
Yeah. World class. Yeah. World class.
It's where it meets. And we don't need to pick a name. that's Albemarle or Chowan. You know, it could be something different. It's just when we have a reference to this
water. But we need to call what to call the water.
Yeah, we need to call it Albemarle. We don't need to call it, we don't need to use the word Chowan.
I agree. Area. I agree with that.
Area. They're already talking about taking up people on boat trips to our property, you know, from it.
Do you blame them?
No, that's what that is. We should be smart enough not to use the term
Sherwin. It's a floating
toll booth. We're going to bring people over there.
So we're on the Albemarle.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
Okay,
and
next.
And
then
we'll bring those people over.
Next page.
So can the minutes reflect that we achieved a consensus on that?
Oh, fuck
yeah, I think so. Now, we're still sticking with Vertee County, Vertee Beach, Vertee County Beach.
We're going to we have more options coming out. Okay. But it's good that we didn't pick a name before. I mean, to me, we're refining. We're getting closer. So. Okay, this is my favorite part. Okay, economic development. And, you know, this is all cyclic. Everything here is connected. So, sure, in yellow, economic development for the park, those primary jobs that we're creating, definitely you're going to have a superintendent or the camp host or somebody who's going to be there, you know, the coordinator or whatever. You probably need an assistant, one or two, maintenance people. And then last week there was mention of transportation. You know, that's a possible job. Having a bus or shuttle or, and even if it's an extension of something the county already has, you probably need that other person. So these are direct job potential in yellow. And in the back of my mind is always, okay, well, when we go for funding, we need to prove where that job is going to come from. In green are those secondary jobs. And secondary jobs, if we get the visitor center going, they're going to need people. It doesn't matter if Vertee County is the management entity or if you have somebody else as the management entity. It's still, you're leveraging that job. Education center, the canteen employees, you know, a kayaking group. Somebody could start a kayaking business and take people on kayak tours. But I listed kayaking and canteen and the horseback riding as a secondary job because those are focal points that y'all have chosen for the park activities. So let's see. But also for job creation, you stand the possibility of incubating a new small business or an expanded small business. So, for instance, if we're going for Golden Leaf funding, that's what they want to know. Is where are our metrics for all of these jobs that we say we're going to be creating? They're also going to be asking us for how are we going to be reporting all of those jobs? You know, how are we going to know that we created 15 jobs? But we need to know that ahead of time. How we're going to, where is that measurement going to come from? So then below the green, you know, the music pavilion, event barn, picnic shelters, these are all activities that may not have a direct job related to them, but they have benefits to the public that are as important to us and the public, but also to our funders, and that is, you know, outdoor recreation is something. I mean, that's health. That's community vitality. Offering a place for your citizens to come together is, you know, civic engagement. I mean,
health and well-being.
Yeah. I mean, it all comes together, and it really does. One thing feeds off of the next. So then, in the purple here, this is where I think you stand to gain your highest impact for jobs, and that is you're leveraging. The need for maybe some more gas stations, more food establishments, a lodging facility, contract services. Well, if somebody comes in and they have a gospel you know, event. They want it catered. So who are your local caterers? So those are, you know, tertiary impacts, but still they're as important, you know. Tourism dollars, shopping. So if you do have people that are coming to visit, or even our residents are coming out more and they're traveling back and forth, they want other places to stop. So, you know, general shopping. For somebody who's not from here, maybe it's stopping and buying something that's made in Bertie County. Maybe, you know, expanded on the peanuts. Somebody who has a potential cottage industry, they could benefit from all this increased traffic. So traffic doesn't need to be numbers of people. It could be small numbers, it's just either impact. If we have the places there for those people who are going back and forth, you know.
That makes good sense.
The sales tax increases, you know, the county is seeing that income, you know, increased revenue. And increased revenue is an item that our funders want to see. You know, how is this going to help Bertie County? They want to know, where's the sustainability coming in? And how are we planning for all of this to come?
I sort of envision a canteen, you know, say like water, sodas, items for fishing, little necessities that sometimes you can get before you leave home. And we have Heavy Aviat, K-Parts, Ronald Rasco, they have these mobile units already set up, and I'm sure they have licensed and certified to do this, that we would let them do it, and we charge them a small fee or not. But we would be helping citizens here in Bertie County with their business.
And you're helping them too.
Right.
And they might need to hire somebody else to help them.
And there's another piece to that.
Yep.
To me, one of the most important things is getting citizens to the property, to use the property, to see the property. We talked about, you know, I grew up here when we had a county fair, right? What a great piece of property to have that home. Or to have, you know, maybe quarterly, they have some kind of event on the county. It's
kind of like
some
a trail.
Kind of event. So people could come out.
Kind of like a tram run, a tram, like a CATA bus to transport people.
I'm just saying, on the property, people, you know, we need to get people to the property. So we need to have an event on that property. You know, where we have a few portable bathrooms, but something like a fair or something to get people there to use it, to see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many people who just have not, you know, seen this place.
Carnival.
Yeah, all those kinds of things. It could be a gospel thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It could be a public baptism, like we talk. I mean, it could be all kinds of things, but we need to focus on getting folks to that property, seeing the value of it. So when we start spending them money, they'll understand that there's real potential.
Well, it may be programming we can do through our departments, like recreation. You know, we did the triathlon over it, but there are things other than triathlon. They have this mud run or whatever. We could set up competitions like that where people come in and they pay $100 to run through the woods and get dirty and whatever. Between cooperative extension, council on aging, recreation, the school system, you know, there could be any number of events we could try to host as a community.
So when you talk about events, and we can jump into this section over here, capacity building and workforce development are two things that are necessary. Special events, you know, we're talking about marketing and about tourism. I mean, it may not be tourism. It may be an event that's just geared towards Bertie residents, but it could still fall under that category. Well, you know, a TDA, Tourism Development Authority, is one of the things I was recommending for capacity building. I mean, it's necessary. Develop that entity that can go ahead and work with the different regions in Bertie and the commissioners to design different events. And so travel and a TDA, well then occupancy tax. Going ahead and creating the occupancy tax so that you will attract lodging entities. You'll have it in place. When it is in place, those lodging numbers or that occupancy tax, that 6%, if that's what you choose, would go to fund activities of the Travel and Tourism Authority, the TDA. So then you'll have money and a group that can be in charge of getting all these events incubated. And you know, the occupancy tax, you know, helps fund the county as well. I think there's a percentage that a county can keep to do the administrative work. But it may seem like you're maybe jumping ahead on it, but to get it in place sooner rather than later is important. especially when we go for the argument with funders who want to see that really big impact for job creation. And down the road, not just job creation now, but your plan for the future. If we are already working on getting the occupancy tax in place, which doesn't affect the residents, doesn't take anything away from the residents, and we're moving forward on developing the Tourism Development Authority to promote all of Bertie's special assets, then you're already showing them that you mean business, you're moving forward. You need to show that argument, you know, of why it is important to give us this money to do what we need to do here. I'm missing some things here. Oh, nonprofit management. There are four main levels of funding. You guys will have five for this property, but the four are you know, grants, county money or government money. The other two are private donors and income, you know, generated from the park. And to attract private donors, they probably won't want to write a check to the county government, but they'll write a check to a 501c3 for the benefit of Bertie's preserving Bertie's natural history or Bertie's community growth or outdoor education. So having an entity that's there to receive those funds for that purpose and having it in place is really important. There are a number of different ways to do that. You could start your own nonprofit and develop the guidelines.
Like a friends group.
Right, you can incubate that. You can go ahead and look at the Friends of the North Carolina State Park. The Park Service incubated that. But every state or every region, or park rather, has their own friends. So there's Friends of Goose Creek, there's Friends of, but a 501c3 that in the future could benefit all regions of Bertie would be great.
Yeah. We have a model for that at Hope. We're the Friends of Hope. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's significant six-figure money. In fact, they live off interest. Mm-hmm.
Let's see, where's my other thing I'm forgetting? Hold on, I just have a brain lapse there.
So Scott, you guys gonna look at the occupancy tax thing to find out what we've got to do to get something in place?
Yeah, there's legislation.
I understand.
Typically, we just add our name to the legislation, but make sure that we find one that has the criteria that meets the interest of Bertie County.
Okay, who's gonna research that out? You again?
Well, I can work with you.
That's why we have you, yes.
Okay.
Okay, well, I'm just making sure
we're delegate
people doing this, because I don't want us to talk about this and then commissioners walk away. We don't have people that lined up. So that's the reason I want to hear names. Right. I mean, y'all agree with that? I want to hear names of who's going to be doing these things. So.
And I think that 501, it makes sense with some kind of friends group or whatever we call it, because it has a lot of potential to, mm-hmm. to help with the cost of some of this work.
And sometimes that's a grant requirement.
That's it.
The money can't go to a local government, but it can go to a nonprofit.
You talk about places like Purdue and others, you know, they're not going to get them unless they get the money to a 501c3.
And what I had forgotten is there's the North Carolina Community Foundation. You can use them as the vehicle for your 501c3. I think Steve was telling me that right now it's Bertie slash Kurt.
Yeah.
It would be better to have it by yourself, because then you can establish your guidelines for it. It's like a memorandum of understanding.
Yeah, I think you're...
This is our target.
Coming from that group, sitting on that board for the last 8 years, we're better off to do our own.
Okay.
Because of restrictions that they have on how the money is used. It wouldn't necessarily match us up, so we're better off to do our own.
That's exactly what I told Ralph. I feel like.
Yeah.
Well, the North Carolina Community Foundation is great because they've already got everything in place. And you've got a donor that wants to give money, they even will manage the money. You know, if you've got somebody that is estate planning, they've got the vehicle to be able to do that. It frees up a lot of administrative, or you can do your own.
I have a question. I noticed you visited state parks, you said. Even that in the Hickory State, it's our understanding this will remain Bertie County, mm-hmm. not go to state. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, y'all know you what I suggest. I want to be a state park because, unless you have some generous donors, this would take years and years. And I think with a state park, it would be a lot faster.
All we have is
time. I think we do. And again, I agree with you. We got time, and there's other ways to work things here.
And it doesn't eliminate the state from helping us fund it, even though we don't have to give it ownership.
And we are under a grant agreement with the Parks and Rec Trust Fund, where you've committed to run this as a recreation facility for at least 25 years. Again, who knows what might happen in the future, but I think the Parks and Rec Trust Fund is going to be looking for future applications from Bertie County, since the money the county received was just for land acquisition. They're expecting to see an overall site plan, an overall strategic plan that they can help fund part of that.
I mean, I'm all for it. There's a bunch of funding out there.
KB Realtors. Is it referenced KB Realtors to help in a festival? Okay. I mean,
on the water,
the general public.
But to get that money, we have to show them how we're connecting all these dots. We can't be just talking.
This is why this is so important.
So the very next important part is workforce development. We all know that, okay, if we got a hotel that's looking to come, or it's only going to be as good as the workers that we've got here to move forward on it. So how do we train people to move forward and to get involved and to stay in Bertie County?
Community colleges.
Right. So we're talking about if all the plans that we have for this and moving beyond the project that would benefit Bertie County, you know, these are subjects: outdoor education, forestry, watershed management. You know, how do you go out there and take care of a park? Small business development, hospitality, travel and tourism, marketing, value-added product development, cottage industries, micro-ag. I mean, micro-ag is, somebody who has an acre could have a flower farm, you know, but where would they sell it? Oh my gosh, there's four or five flower distributors in Little Washington, you know. But also, it's cut flowers for people here that want to buy. So when you have the growth starting to happen, there's all these possibilities. Even if we're in rural America, you know, we still have the options and we still have the possibilities to tap into what's happening here. Economic development, community planning, nonprofit management, I mean, all of those things are needed.
I like the idea of connecting and telling our story. So, Dominic, talk with people of North Carolina Association's County Commissioners. What was it, Dominic? A podcast or something supposed to be on?
Amber Harris with the County Cast.
Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to.
So the suggestion I had made to the grassroots coordinator with the government relations was having our commissioners or Scott or Juan to sit in to talk about the Tall Glass of Water site, seeing how Amber had came to visit several years ago when the site was, I think, newly purchased. We had discussed possibly doing a follow-up. Either, and Scott had suggested her coming back to the county to visit the site. in addition to the commissioners or the county managers going to talk about development.
Good, cool.
So it just as a way to discuss promotion, marketing. It's also a way just to let the other counties know.
We take that video that we shared with the board back in July, right after the weekend. Mm-hmm. Turn down the music just a little bit and let a couple of commissioners do a voiceover and talk about all the work that went into the planning, the securing the funds, and then what an opportunity this is for residents, for children, people of all ages. And
Scott, we need to use that to apply for the association's top award for development in the state. This would win hands down.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is all over the state right here.
Not only on the state level, but at the national level.
So our awards would be a killer.
For the general public, our waterways, Dr. Riggs, who's been coming from East Carolina University, is trying to get our waterways. He thinks it's a very good possibility. It's been our waterways. There's a Roanoke, the Cascade, the Albemarle. It's all going to build the national waterways where people will open up their waterways map and we're there for Chief County, where we're not there now. Okay? Because in his words, he's a scientist, we have world-class waterways. Okay? That nobody was able to power.
And you know that our House member, Representative Goodwin, has proposed legislation that would allow ferry systems, and one of the locations they're looking at is access here in Virginia. Either down there from all into and the Showa. Mm-hmm. That has possibilities. I mean, he has a lot of support for it. Yeah, but there's a bill out there, you know.
Yeah, Scotch Hall is a destination for golfers coming from the beach would be a great.
That's it. And if you're really looking at, I don't know what, like I said, their appetite is, but I bet you if there was a high-end kind of recreational kind of vehicle site connected with them or could transport to their site, that golfing, I mean, that's a world-class golf center right now. Could use some help.
And back to Dominique's idea, the gentleman that runs this place now, the manager, Rod, he came here from Raleigh, from one of the television stations. He was a behind-the-scenes graphics and camera person and editing person, and they have all sorts of equipment back here that they've purchased for the purpose of doing educational type things. So we could do a lot of that production right here in Windsor, in the county, to help tell that story and get it up to the Commissioners Association. And I think Amber Harris would be a huge, huge help. Yeah, she's really kind of taken a liking to what's happening.
One last thing about workforce development. So if we could show that there's some action happening with the local colleges or college to, you know, how could they help? How could they pony in?
I think it's colleges and the middies, because we have workforce development, the work centers throughout the region and for this county.
Because if our argument is, listen, we're going to create jobs, travel and tourism jobs, but we don't have a way to teach.
Well, they have a small business development center, so if somebody wanted to do one of the cottage inn to rent bicycles or rent kayaks or to do tours or...
And I think a lot of people, well, they have the idea, but where do they go to connect? I mean, it's not public knowledge, you know. There's not a list out there that's accessible to people who have an idea like that, you know. But actual courses.
Are we going to try to get more beach access in that farther corner?
That's going to be a cleanup area over there. We got to get a barge in there that's got some sort of excavator on it to get things that are put there, get it out of the way. That's something probably the board will discuss.
Talking about the side corner, the side
corner. We're talking about on the 10.5 acres there, okay?
I'm talking about right here on our property. I mean, this area right here building, where it's a whole lot prettier beach than right down here.
Oh, yeah. I would think we would
just about building
the road. I'm sorry, I thought you were talking
about. No, I'm talking about that. If you've gone through there, that's really beautiful.
You're absolutely right. I thought you'd expand it on
and it would give, if you had a busy day where a lot of people were at the beach, you would have more beach access for the public to use.
Absolutely.
Okay. And again, we'll need to talk to CAMA about it because they'll have input on that proximity to the water. And
Can I, about the RVs, are we going to be pricing out any further development here for RVs, or are we holding tight on that until we get the information from the access? Is that right?
My personal opinion is we can move forward with pricing, okay, while he's taking care of easements. And if we can do that, then we're killing two birds with one stone and getting going. And that way we're just, the ball is rolling.
So we'll price out these things in pockets, like all the picnic shelters is one.
Yeah.
And then music pavilion options are second. Okay, then you guys can
adjust.
Yeah, and I think we ought to be, at sometime I'll be thinking about the other partners in the county, how those partners can help us, whether that's Scotch Hall in terms of attraction to the golf. Even things like what Hope does, they do reenactments. We had a tremendous turnout, but the property is too small. We need a larger property to do what reenactments on. We're a better place than this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we draw a lot of folks.
You know, as you're pricing this stuff, I guess you can price each individual thing in the back end, but you may find that it's cheaper as you're pricing this stuff to do more than one thing at a time. Right. So I guess you may need prices on what it would cost to do things individually, and well, if we do this at one time, we can get it done for this. I mean, when you get down there and the equipment and get things moving and get things done,
sure.
Sometimes it's easier to go ahead and get it done.
Right.
Cheaper for
we have talked about pond and all too.
Right.
And if you're gonna hold large events on the waterfront, you know, one thing that we kind of talked about is too, you've got to get your infrastructure back there, you know. Electricity, water, you know, everything. I mean, unless you can use big generators and, you know, to get started.
Right. Mr. Spivey and I got with Scott reference water. The well drilling company, I'm trying to think of the name of them right now.
Majet.
They've already got all the testing and everything that they said that they'd give it to us at no charge. Okay. And 70-foot wells in that area, you hit fresh water. Okay. And they were willing. Mr. Majet said, we'll give you all the testing you want, whether you use it or not, we'll just give you what we've got. Because they had put wells on their piece of property back there already.
And we have two ponds on the property already, right? But this is a different area you're talking about. Here you're talking about a larger area.
Yeah.
Well, my idea, just in general, is that there's going to have to be a lot of road construction in there. A lot. And it's going to take a lot of sand to build these roads. If we can dig upon it, because there's sand out here that's usable, we'll be saving a lot of money. We'll wind up with a beautiful pond, and we'll be saving a lot of money on road construction.
And one of the big attractions always is fishing in this county, and not just fishing for the river, but fishing, pond fishing.
Yeah.
And if you had stock ponds in there, and you know, bring people into fishing. Oh my God!
Because there's no fishing.
I love that.
There's no fishing in the river.
You had stock ponds in there.
Would
that be like? We got two ponds already.
How many acres you plan on that fee, that pond itself?
You know, that measurement, I think, was 200 by 275.
So you're talking about 1 acre. That's about 40,000 square feet, right?
I think if you start getting the pond for
4,000, I could hear you.
10 times that deal.
What's that? I'm sorry?
I said, if you start digging the pond for purpose of getting material out of there to build a road, you're talking about a lot bigger.
Well, again, you know, from a development standpoint, the more dirt you get away from, the less area you have to develop also. So we've always got to keep that in mind.
Well, water's a pretty big draw, too.
Well, we got millions of gallons at the other end. So my whole point is fishing ponds, yeah, okay. But the more land you get rid of, the less area you have to build something. So.
One of them's a little lower.
Yeah.
And then in his report somewhere, he thought, for historical purposes, building a replica of a Bertie County grist mill there.
That would be pretty cool. That'd be pretty cool.
Kind of neat water, but, yeah.
Well, Margaret's Mill over there.
Yeah, and of course, we're not showing all of the hiking trails, the horse trails.
Can I mention a little bit about the First Colony Foundation? I had that list. Steve and Robin and I spent about an hour with John Ed Whitehurst one day last week. And he came, I guess, as an emissary, as an ambassador on behalf of the First Colony Foundation. And they have done, as you're aware, some preliminary archaeological work. And their initial opinion, because it's still being tested, is that the county's land is probably a treasure trove compared to Site X, and particularly the field that's closest to the water, that's in soybeans right now. And they are, I think, going to be coming to us asking for an opportunity to, well, you've already given them the BR-49. I don't want to put words in John. And I invited John Ed to come to this meeting. He was out of town. He could not come today. But they want to make sure that to the extent there are valuable historical artifacts that we try to work with them, that they can collect those items before anything really significant happens. And again, the motion that y'all approved, as I recall, was that as long as it doesn't interfere with
that's exactly
right. And it's a real balancing act there. But he indicates that the First Colony Foundation thinks that there's some real historical value in terms of our nation's history that looks like all arrows point to Bertie County. So from a heritage tourism and cultural tourism, we've really got some opportunity here. And the other thing I just feel we need to talk about is some of us have heard Mayor Hoggard indicate that if a welcome center were to be constructed, they'd really like to have it here in Windsor. And if an educational center for the colonial and archaeological work is to be constructed, it really ought to be here in Windsor. And I'm putting that emphasis onto his words, rather than being on the county's land. And the sense that I've gathered over the years from this board, and I want to make sure everybody's nodding heads and we get capture this, is that the county's goal is that the Welcome Center be on or near the Tall Glass of Water site, and that we would be talking and interacting with DOT right away to get ahead of any other interest that might already be making phone calls and visits to try to make that happen. And I think when it comes time to build the first hotel, Windsor probably is the most appropriate place because they have the water and the sewer and the highway access. But as this thing evolves over the years, it might even be that a hotel motel type lodge would be appropriate down toward our way or Sounding Creek. But I'd hate to see us get in a tug of war between the two communities, but Site X and the landing point for those potential lost colonists is not up here in Windsor. It's down there on that water.
Well, the board would agree. I think that if we announce our presence, this is what our idea is, then it's best to do it up front and quick and soon.
But especially on that welcome center, you know, I really think.
I think a welcome center in Windsor is personal for Windsor, but a welcome center in the county is for the county.
Exactly.
And the whole region.
Right.
Because you'll be at a place where it's like the last stop before you get to Corolla or Kill Devil Hill.
Well, this is the Bertie Beach. I mean, this is where we got to have a welcome center. Okay?
Well, if you'll notice in your travels, most of the time, welcome centers, even on interstate U.S. highways, they're at least 50 miles off.
Mm-hmm.
The one that 50 miles to where we are there. If you come down 17, the one just outside of, would be south of Chocolate would be right at 50 miles, if you're staying right on the 17. So, you know, you can't compare the one that's in Plymouth because 64, you know, naturally spreads off. That used to be their gauge was 50 miles.
And we discussed that with Tuesday. You have to make separate application to that.
Right, that's right.
But they're also on the highway. They're not way off of the highway like this would be.
Well, but as Commissioner Wesson mentioned earlier, depending on which way 87, and we've got a preliminary on 87. But even if we were using what is now Highway 17, if we get that easement,
going across the field,
it's not that far.
2/10 of a mile.
And going across that field, that's reserved for both easements.
Not going down Ballgrave, it's coming right off 17.
I mean,
you're
looking at Right there at 17.
Yes.
Let's say it was put somewhere in the middle of that field. You're still right there at the beach. People are going to say, hey, let's go over here to this park at the beach, have lunch, have
this park,
canteen,
RVs, all
this other good stuff.
Now, if they look at 87, if they do, your actual cloverleaf for 87 is at Black Rock right now, Black Rock Valley, excuse me. That's where that might be. That's where it's right now, as opposed to
that. But he had to say it's for the future, 87.
Right. And you're going to still have 17 like it is. It's still going to be there. The four lane is still going to be there for access to Black Rock Subdivision and Blackbeards. So they might look at that and say that's going to be, you know, a mile away or 3/4 of a mile or whatever. I don't know, but we can certainly get them to start looking at it now. I can tell you there's no money with DOT right now. There is zero money.
Yeah, they already announced that with all the
zero
issues with their
entire election.
But I would like for the mayor to know what we said doesn't affect they want to. Welcome Center certainly
have,
but
we still can go. We're going to try to stop them doing whatever they want to do. We shouldn't have to stop whatever we want to do
exactly.
Either. So that's the reason I think we announce our presence in a letter.
And we probably need to meet with our representatives in the General Assembly and make sure they're aware of this board's intentions so that they can be our advocate, you know, on and talk with our DOT board members. And it's just. We need to get out front of that.
Well, I just think we need to announce our presence.
Well, if we could work toward coordinating a meeting with those folks, I think it'd be really, really good to have them here and maybe sit in a room like this and let them understand what a great vision the board has.
Well, I am done.
Me too.
Good feedback. Thank you.
Well, I know you don't have a crystal ball. If you had to guess, how far away do you think we go from actually breaking some ground?
It would require a crystal ball. How about we talk about that next time we get together? Let's talk to KMI and get some pricing, and then we can talk about time frames.
Yeah, correct. We committed ourselves as a board to doing these community awareness kinds of days. We did one, used the auditorium at the school. You know, as we move forward with that, I would love to be able to share this vision and continue to share that vision with the larger public. You know, I mean, this is what excites people, you know, getting them to understand it and see it, focus on, yes, what it does for us here, and what it does to bring resources into this community. We've got to tell that story.
How do you think it's best to tell that story? Go to the individual communities?
Well, I think you can do some of both, but I think that having that community awareness kind of thing, we invite the whole county to come and see us and come to find out what's going on in the county. You know, we supplemented that with some brochures that went out announcing it. Well, for them to get part of this vision, and it wouldn't be a whole day of
right.
A major piece of it.
And you're right, but what affects us last time when we didn't have as large a turnout as we wanted was there was some other huge function going on. Yeah, exactly. And you know,
it was a big funeral that day too.
Yeah, well, huge funeral that day.
Should we start inviting representatives from the towns of the county to these work sessions just to observe? I don't have anyone that actually come, but whether they came or not, they've been invited.
Well, Greg, one of the things we do, have the quarterly
mayor's
thing, and we always have a topic. Right, Robin, over there, have a topic, and they love that to hear that. They haven't seen any of this.
I would love to do the town hall meeting just for this event and invite senators and mayors and everybody. And then the second portion would be to actually use Donna and health facility to all take a trip down to the beach, and maybe we could put signs, visionary signs, where we want these things mapped out.
Would it be crazy for the town hall meeting to get that tent back?
That would be great.
Portable microphone?
I think that hits the nail on the head right there. Because people are going to come to the beach, be there, it can be in their, I mean, sooner or better, of course, but I think we're in the cooler weather, okay, to get people out there.
Like a fall?
Exactly, like a October. First of November type deal, something like that, right in that area there. We're getting some 60-degree weather, and people can come out and hear the vision.
Well, the nice part is where all that dust was, where the tables were, that's all grass now. And we just need to get it and put it down.
How much does that tent cost?
We got a hook plantation when we rented it. I think it was a 40 by 30, okay? Which that tent was bigger than that, we paid like $3,000, okay? But we got the next step size up, which was a 40 by 50, if I'm not mistaken, which is 2,000 square feet. I think it was like around $4,500 to rent it.
Because what we had was like 60 by 90 or something. That was bigger than that.
5,400 square feet.
Yeah. I guess the question is, we need a tent.
Well, I think if you're going to have a conversation and if you've got a roof over their head and a place for them to sit, because with that roof and a sound system, they'll be able to hear.
Exactly.
And maybe a little tour through the property. I think I'd hear a little potential signage or something. Just give an intro where this is going
to be. Well, that takes us into what we've planned on our outreach section. So contacting each of the town areas and our representatives. Question. Part of the outreach was connecting with potential partners, partnerships for the sounds, entities that are local or regional that will have probably a role or want to have a role in the project. So do we want to do that before we have the bigger community connect?
Probably so, but how long would that take? How long would that take? We're August 26th now, or 27th. I meant, would it take 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks?
It takes a lot. I mean, to pull this off, we really need to make it a spring event. I mean, we put together a pretty good fire drill to do it June 29th, but I think you'd want a little bit longer.
That's the big thing. Right, but I think John was asking about, what do we do the other smaller? You might talk about the big piece could be spring, but I mean, when is our next commissioners meeting? I mean, all we do it quarterly.
September, October.
We got all the towns there, all the representatives from the towns.
What time?
And we have it out there.
It hasn't been announced.
Yeah,
we have it out there.
Yeah. And who's the host of this? I've never had one. Who's up?
Well, we don't actually ever host. It's always a town. But you know, Scotch Hall agreed to host that one time, and that was really nice to have them get everybody in their big room. That's if they'd be willing to try that again.
Well, if you could get it on Project Soil.
That's the best thing right there. And I personally don't have a problem with the tent.
We may need to price buying a tent. If this is something we're going to do on a fairly regular basis, I don't know what it costs, but.
See, these people set it up the whole nine yards. This thing is an issue to set up and make sure it's anchored down properly for winds and all this other kind of stuff.
They carry insurance and all too, don't they? Liability insurance.
They cover all that.
We're covering our building.
I mean, if we're going to have this facility here, and we'll probably need a tent for I mean, I can see us needing one 2 or 3 or 4 times a year.
Well, it takes a big crew. I mean, it takes a crew.
We kind of got a pretty big crew.
And I'd like to go. I was there while they put up the tent at Tall Glass. It is a large event.
I mean, they got to take the driving these huge stakes in the ground, pulling it tight. I mean, engineeringly wise, I mean, for the wind not to pick it up and take it away. I mean, I don't know if we're ready for that one yet. Maybe in the future. That's just me.
I think if we do the tent, it's worth whatever it costs to be able to share our vision
to get with the public.
I mean, that's to me the key to making this work, including the stockholders. Have them come.
You even use it once a quarter. That's 4 times a year. I mean,
I bet you. I think the cost of $15,000. I wouldn't think. I don't know. It won't cost anything to price one. Can we price one?
I feel like I would like to know more about what Kama's thoughts are and the research on the access road before we have a bigger outreach meeting with partners, just so we know exactly, you know, what we can or can't do. So to me, it's the steps are getting more research done and then having the outreach meeting with potential partners. You know,
well,
and then in the springtime, community.
But can't
in that order.
You may be right, but what you'll find out is those partners, at least the ones I think we're talking about, have a lot of expertise that could offer us.
But I mean, we can do it in money. I would like to know more about what we can do on the beach.
Now, Scott, when we applied for that grant, in the $500,000 Part F grant, okay, which was used to purchase part of the land, okay, and the county came up with a balance, okay. How much contact did we have with Cannon with our intentions of what we were doing with this piece of property?
Very little, because it was just land acquisition. But now that we're doing...
But a Part F grant is for a park, correct?
For recreation.
Okay, for recreation. Mm-hmm. So the intentions were already put out there, what it was going to be used for. Would that be a correct statement?
Right, but there are very strict regulations about what we can and can't do.
That part I get.
Yeah. Well, the next cycle would be a May application, so we've got time to work on our well-defined site application. And I'd want to have a letter from CAMA in that application indicating their concurrence with whatever we do.
Yeah, I was just talking about basically what our thought process is, what we're mobiles and things of this nature.
But John, when we talk about getting funding, having this fairly succinct plan is important, because not only for, you know, CAMA, we're talking about what it's going to leave, or KB Reynolds, anybody else who's got some money.
That really wasn't what I was talking about. What I was talking about is us having the program that Ernestine's talking about, okay? That's what I was talking about. I wasn't talking about applying for grants, but telling the general public more information about what we're doing here, okay? And these are some of the steps we've got to go through, because it will explain the timeline we have to go through. People we have to deal with, the people that we would like to partner with and things of that nature, okay? And this would be the next phase. Does that make sense? I'm not talking about what we would need to apply for the grants. I'm just talking about this gives the people an outline, an understanding of what we're doing and why it takes time to get some of these things done. because a lot of this has taken time that people don't comprehend why it's taking so much time because they've been not informed.
But I thought that was the point, because if we wait to May to do what Scott was talking about, that seems to me a long time to wait. I mean, we should be pulling those partners
together. That's exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Wait before then. I mean, that's why I think that's commissioners exactly what I'm saying. You know, we have enough right now to give them a vision. What we have right now.
Then you mean our partners?
These are just other commissioners. They represent the whole county. They're commissioners from every township in the county. And they all come together once a quarter for a dinner. We have a speaker. This is a perfect topic to connect them with what we're trying to do. Then we can,
But we also have enough vision to go to the partners and say, this is what we have. This is what we want to see in the future. How can you come in with us?
Actually, what I know for me, I'm visual, I'm quite sure some of our partners are. When you're talking about a park, and you have never been there, it is a whole new different piece. And when you're sitting there, then you can catch the vision. So maybe we need two meetings, a small one, and then the one for the community, where the partners would come. Camera can look at this. Where we're talking about putting the handicap ramp, and then the more better, what would be best suited for us. And we're all here together.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Right here.
Okay, so everybody in one big group, or the partners?
I'd rather do it on the side.
Well, okay, but I just wanted to find partners. Partners are potential partners in the partnership of sound and arts council and
Burton County Schools. I think we
Yeah, I think we have enough.
Exactly.
Just trying to get.
And that's exactly what I'm trying to say. And have it there, we're talking about, because that place has a huge impact on the city.
Yeah,
but that's not your council of governments, same group though. Right.
Well,
what he's talking about is totally separate.
They can come.
They can come.
But yes, we're doing two different meetings here. The target is
we don't want, but the community.
Okay.
And if they want to come, that's fine. But again, we need to hit that impact so people understand what we're doing.
But it will take some time to put this together. I mean, we can't just say we're going to do this October 15th, right?
No, I agree with that.
I mean, you really need some time. And let me give a point of true confession here. We did a lot of things for June 29th. And with the board's blessing, with the board's urging, and with my pushing, and I probably violated some camera rules at least 100 times. Because the tent that we put up, major violation, was way too close to the code, didn't have a permit. I was told that the little signs that we put at the beach that said swim at your own risk, no lifeguard on duty, we could have been hit for $500 a pop for drilling the hole and putting those questions, because we didn't have a permit. Again, you'd think it's our property, we're trying to keep the public safe, we don't want any little kid to drown. And we've been advised that within the CAMA network, it's kind of like building inspectors. You have building inspectors sometimes that will work with you and understand what you're trying to do, but then you have other building inspectors like CAMA inspectors who get a jolly out of writing a ticket, out of hitting you with a fine. And we've actually been coached as to which CAMA regulators we should contact when we want to talk about our park and talk about our amenities, because there may be some that just aren't friendly to the development, aren't friendly to literally putting a stick in the ground for a thing. But we really have to be careful, because I loved having the table and the tents looking out over the water, but apparently that was a major no-no. And even though we put up a fence and we had a buffer area, we've got to be a little more planful next time.
I am 100% behind a big event where we invite the public. But I fear that if we're talking about bringing people like other partners there, and I think they should be there, not having a conversation with them individually first before is a mistake.
Okay.
And I'm talking about Canada, and I'm talking about some of the other places. They need to be brought on board and then invited to be a part of that whole thing. Just like the mayor's, but I think the starting point is within the county to that Commissioners Association. Mm-hmm. That is a unique group that they can spread some very good vibes about this whole thing within that group. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's for, you know.
But again, these people want to come up with stuff.
That we would talk with our stakeholders or partners first before you drag them to the beach like, what? Well, what? So I thought that was just automatic that there would be a conversation.
When you say stakeholders, you mean other entities that want that could be involved.
Right.
Okay. Well, they're going to want to have it be an open session. So one group wants to talk about how they might be involved. You know, the next group talks about how they could possibly, what they could bring to the table. So.
Well, you could have two groups, actually, a couple. You could have two groups. One is kind of the government entity kind of thing that deals with those folks. But then the other ones could be other just players, like the school system, like Hope, like Partners for the South, like those kinds of folks. That's a different group. And they have a different, you know.
That's not right.
Yeah, you mix those two, you don't want to do that.
No, and that group there could come in the community thing, okay, and sit and listen to what our ideas are, okay, and that these ideas can change as we move. It's a lot of moving parts here, okay.
Now, I heard him saying about where the tent is at, what about where the pond is, where I saw the video map. Because some had a way because you know it was sand and it was ready to have to fix that part of the ground. So if you bring the people in with their cars and trucks, they all like.
No, you're right. We need to get some nice grass.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's time to get
in. Yep. And we need like you know, right about that.
First time ever getting sale from the
well, I didn't hear that.
I said the first time I ever got my cell phone dusted.
Hey, you didn't drop it either, did you?
Maybe my body.
I went and got the water, I came out, and the dust was blowing on people's stuff.
It sounds like we need to get an estimate to sow some grass seed out there.
I think you probably got some. If you're playing this time, you need to put fescue.
Need to look.
That's basically yeah. This time of year.
Actually, they make this stuff called top tea. That's a winter grass. And that stuff comes back every year. And you don't have to replant.
You don't have to overseed it.
You don't have to overseed it. And I've got it planted at my place, and it comes back every year. It's coming back right now.
Does it do okay in full sun?
It does great in full sun. And then when the summer comes, it goes away, and then it comes back again that winter.
So it goes when it's summer.
That's right.
Do we need to wait till spring and plant more beer?
Yeah.
Probably we need to. Long term. Mm-hmm. That's tough grass.
You sure? It's what they use in golf course. That kind of stuff called top tip.
So we can have spring plant?
All that the hot.
Can't talk about it. Maybe everybody than I can, but I think long term you better wait for it. There's no need to plant for you this time of year. You need to wait for spring. Okay. If you plant fescue this time of year, it's going to die.
That's so, right. Well,
cooperative extension, I'm sure, will help you.
I agree with that.
Well, lunch is here and Chris is arriving, so we want to start and have the working lunch. We probably need a blessing for our lunch. Do we have a blessing for our
lunch? Yes.
Let us pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we bow our heads, Lord, to say thank you, Lord. We thank you for this gathering. We thank you, Lord, for allowing us to come together to discuss the business of Bertie County, Lord. And we ask that you will bless the food we're about to receive for the nourishment of our bodies. Please, Lord, bless the hands to prepare it and bless the people who are with that. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
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 Okay. I mean, I didn't.
Yeah, no, that's okay. You're welcome either way.
I got uniforms. I got to go through.
Remember, I got you on for the third.
Yes. That is correct.
Yeah, I was on with you.
It's already in there. Okay. He beat you to it.
Well, thank you for having me. Scott invited me to come and kind of update on the recovery from Hurricane Matthew and Tropical Storm Julia. I kind of feel like the recovery has been a 20-year process. But, I just kind of made some bullet points here because there's a lot to this. Starting with the acquisition project. We've acquired 27 homes out of 30. There was technically 34 homes in the original funding agreement, but four of those were historic, so we have not touched those. So we've acquired 27 out of 30. The other three homes are in process of closing. That'll be happening any week now. One of them's got some title issues. One of them's got some communication issues, stuff like that. So, but made a lot of progress with that. What goes along with acquisition is relocation. We've provided relocation assistance for two homeowners so far to buy new houses. There's a lot of people that purchased new houses prior to the acquisition of their old home. So we're working with them to determine whether they're eligible and for how much in potential reimbursement of closing costs and moving expenses and things like that. We also have a substantial amount, probably half the houses that we are acquiring were tenant occupied. So we're going back in and doing the tenant relocation assistance that's necessary. Now, a lot of those people have been out of their homes, those tenants out of the homes since the storms. So we have to go back to those people and get a bunch of documentation showing that they were in the homes at the time, like utility records, stuff like that. So I've got Donna working on that pretty much full time, all the relocation part of this. So that's probably going to be a 4 to 6 month thing to deal with all the relocations. So, but they weren't eligible for relocation until we acquired the homes. So we had to kind of finish that acquisition part. So, the second thing that goes along with acquisitions is demolition. So we've bid out the first 8 houses to be demolished. We have Boyd Copeland under contract to do that. To do those first 8 houses. The state is requiring a state permit for the demolitions in all these cases, so that state permit requires a 10-day waiting period. My understanding is we just signed the contracts with Boyd last week. The 10-day waiting period should start this week when they apply for that state permit. So sometime in the next couple of weeks, we'll start to see some of the houses coming down. That'll probably go on for maybe 3 or 4 weeks. The first 8 are kind of scattered between the Maple Street area, the Governor's Road area, and then some north of town, Powell Stokes area. So we've also written up 9 more demolitions. They're already done. I added the write-ups the other day, and they're ready to go out the bid. So we're going to send those out probably next week, out the bid, and we'll have a bid opening on that sometime in September. So that'll be 9 more. That'll get us up to 17, which we're kind of working our way through these as they have come. So that's where we are with that. But you'll see a lot of demolition if you go out to these neighborhoods in the next few months.
Chris, I noticed from neighborhood across from Powell Stokes, a couple of houses out there. I don't know whether the owners or whatever. People are out there and pulled off siding, pulled off. Can they do that?
Well, we've had a couple of homeowners go in there and take some things. We had some people say, well, you know, I really want this this fixture from the house or something like that. We haven't been too picky about that kind of stuff. So hopefully it's just homeowners that have done that. And it's not, but it's possible that there could be some other people out there. We've tried to make sure that the houses are secured as much as possible. We've done asbestos inspections in them. And you know, we're working to try to make sure that there's nothing wrong going on out there in any of the places. So really those 2 neighborhoods, this one here and that one there.
But I mean, if they're going to be demolished anyway, I mean, is there, should homeowners not do that? Like pull off shutters and siding? I mean, a couple out there have been stripped.
Yeah. I don't know the situation as to why they've been stripped. You know, it's not anything that we've initiated. So it may have been that the previous owner initiated it. But most of these houses a lot of them have been closed for a couple of months. It may have been that some of that stuff happened right before closing too. So I don't know. So obviously the best thing we can do is get the demolition guys out there and get them moving so that we can, but we've got to go through a process for procurement, you know, to make sure it's fair. We had a lot of interest in the first demolition package from local demolition contractors. So we want to make sure that we're, you know, putting that out there and giving everybody the opportunity. So it is a good amount of work. So.
How many contractors would you estimate have shown interest in the work?
We had 6 bids in the first bid package for demolition. I think at least 3 of those were Bertie County contractors. So obviously the low bidder was the Bertie County contractor. So that's kind of what we expected. You know, we saw a big disparity between the bids. When you got some firm out of Raleigh coming in and bidding, they tend to bid about twice as much. So
the middle of the courthouse.
So
385 versus
So, but yeah, we'll be doing a lot of demolition over the next few months. So we'll keep those guys busy. On to the elevation project. We bid out and awarded the first 4 units, and we're actually signing contracts on the first 2 of those tomorrow morning. That's over here on 2 houses on Sutton Drive. That are next door to each other. It's the same contractor. It's doing both of them. So they're going to elevate both of them and then get them going. So we've awarded 2 others on Governor's Road. Those contractors are trying to finish up some work before they can get started out there. So, but that'll be happening this fall. You know, we'll be getting into those. We've also finished 4 more write-ups with the engineer. He's been out to those houses, and my understanding is the drawings are done. So it's just a matter of kind of tying up our write-up, and then we can put that out for bid. So that'll be going out to bid sometime in mid-September, and we'll get those prices for that. We'll probably be able to make the awards at the town's October meeting for both those 4 elevations and the next demolition bid package. That's kind of what our expectation is. So So that's where we are with the elevation. There's a couple other elevations that are a little bit questionable as to whether we're going to elevate them. We've had the engineer look at them. We have one that he didn't really like it. he didn't really want to sign off on the elevation of this. So, and then we have a couple that we're trying to work with the homeowners. So,
but that's the Pierce property, M17, is that?
No, the Pierce property is in a different project in that DRA project. I'll go on down to that DRA project if nobody else had any questions on the elevator. So the DRA project, we completed one house, the Williams house, I think it was Diane. We completed that house, and then we have the Pierce house, and then we're kind of still keeping some money set aside. I'll explain why in a minute, but the Pierce house, we're kind of going back and forth with the state a little bit. State first approved of the amount that we were going to spend to elevate it, and then they kind of came back and they had a little second guessing. So I'm trying to provide them some additional information to support the elevation. Rather than acquisition, which is what they're kind of pushing, but I don't, their numbers that they think it would cost are much less than what it would actually cost based on our elevation, based on our acquisitions that we've been doing. So for that particular house. So I'm kind of going back and forth with them on that, and we should have that settled within the next.
But the Pierce's preference is to actually have it elevated and remain?
My understanding is Mr. Pierce's preference is to have it elevated.
It is.
So, and I think with the amount of, one of the arguments to the state is with the amount of acquisition demolition that we're doing, that we do want to elevate some things. We don't want everything pushed into an acquisition. If it's a good house, it's fixed back up, it's occupiable. You know, that's a different scenario than the ones that have just been kind of left. So so that's kind of where that stands. The five historic houses that are part of the bigger $6 million project, Alan has signed the updated grant agreement for that, which was basically the agreement with the State Historic Preservation Office and FEMA and Emergency Management and the town. They all had to agree. So it is essentially taken about 6 months to get that document together with those four agencies. Probably would have took the town about a week. So it's the other three agencies that are the problem there. He mailed that out back to them on August 12th. There was an ad run in the paper right after the 1st of July talking about those properties that they were going to be demolished. It was one of the things that had to happen. So we're looking for that grant agreement so that they'll put the money into the project. And then as soon as they put the money into the project, we'll start with those properties. There was five.
Those will be acquisitions.
There's four acquisitions and one elevation. The CDBG-DR project, which is the county's project, that I kind of put that in the same boat as the DRA project, where those are the potential houses that they had the recovery center for at the state level, and the state has been identifying houses for eligibility, duplication of benefits, you know, those type of things. And now they're, my understanding is they're in their environmental review process. That's been a long drawn out process that the states went forward with state consultants and stuff like that. We've heard that there's a few houses that are eligible. We don't know which houses they are. But we haven't had too much communication with the state on that. I don't know if you have any update on that, Scott.
The CDBG-DR has been ugly. I don't believe our grant agreement has been approved yet, and they've tried to modify it. As Chris mentioned, they came down here, they set up a recovery center, and Chris's office provided them 25 files, 25 homes, you know, people that, that we've done all the background on, created all the forms, gave those 25 files to the state. They sat on them for over a year. And in the process, the state surveyed all the counties that are in the recovery effort. CDBG has 8 steps, and the first 5 are more administrative. Steps 6, 7, and 8 are actually where you bid the work and get the job done on the site. They ask every community which set of steps would you prefer to handle. And we sent word that for Bertie County, we would prefer to do 6, 7, and 8, because since Floyd, there's been a lot of experience with Holland Consulting doing the bidding and the contract oversight and either the elevation or the demolition. Well, the state wants to do it all. And they are trying to apply pressure. They are trying to twist arms. And they are trying to find any leverage or wedge that they can drive into the system. We've had, I think, 4 different requests from the state asking us to document and verify the request for proposal process that we went through right after the floods. Both the town and the county went through a detailed RFP so that we could engage Holland Consulting on the front end. Well, the state, you know, has spent a ton of money to create 40 new jobs in the Office of Resiliency and Recovery. They're trying to find work for those folks to do. And part of the effort of the state is they're bringing in these large national consulting groups from New Jersey, from Texas, from Florida, from California. When we did some of the, I guess on the HMPG, when you were bidding for the appraisal work, I think it was, one of those national groups bid on, and this is where they go and appraise the value of the home that's been damaged. And I think we ended up using an appraisal group out of Gates County, and they're charging $200 to $300 per appraisal.
It was 300 some odd. Yeah.
Well, one of these groups bid to perform the appraisal in Bertie County, $4,000 per appraisal.
Oh.
And again, and I've got a stack of emails. I mean, I've been contacted by representatives of the legislature, representatives of emergency management, representatives of, I forget all the different offices. And when I've pointed out to them the experience we've had with some of these large national groups, of course, they can't believe it. Well, we have invited repeatedly the director of the Office of Resiliency and Recovery to come down and meet with us. Her name's Laura Hogshead. They've recruited her from the federal government. And we have begged and begged and begged to have them come and meet with Alan and Chris and myself. And we'd like to have representatives of both boards so that we can demonstrate to them that we're making plans or making headway on our library cooperative extension. We've got the EMS building completed, and we now have these acquisitions, these demolition projects. Well, I guess it was about 6 months ago, they couldn't find the 25 files that Chris had taken to them when they were operating the recovery center here in Bertie County. And after many, many, many repeated requests, we really would like to get these files back. They finally identified where they were. They were in Kinston.
Downtown Kinston.
And you had to personally go to Kinston to pick them up. And they basically needed an FBI background check on him so that he could grab our files. The most unusual piece in all this, about 6 weeks ago, I got a phone call on a Friday afternoon. It was almost 5 o'clock from Norma Houston. She is a School of Government faculty member. She had, back in the heyday, she worked for Mark Bassnight when he was the Senate pro tem leader. She was his legal advisor. Well, she kind of got a real nice job with the School of Government, and they've also outposted her as a liaison with this Office of Recovery and Resiliency. So she calls me one Friday afternoon, 4:45. And there are times I wonder if folks don't call just to see if there are any county managers working at 4:45, and I happen to be the only one that answers the phone. So anyhow, I'm speaking with her, and she says, Scott, I've got good news for you. Under the CDBG DR program, there have been three projects approved for Bertie County. But she couldn't tell me which projects they were. I've asked her to send word what has been approved. I've yet to get the first email from the Office of Resiliency and Recovery. No, and again, I've been trying to ply it out of them. Nothing from the CDBG office. And it is the damnedest thing I've ever dealt with in terms of bureaucracy and frustration. And I really believe that there's a sticking point with the state. I think the state, if they had it their way, their preference would be that the state would be handling everything here locally for demolition, for acquisition, for elevation. And my hunch is that we're probably way ahead of all the other communities. We've been through this so many times that as our efforts were put together, I really think we're out front for that. Well, there is a meeting tomorrow in Greensboro, and I think I sent an email out to y'all the other day, where a lot of these folks are going to be in Greensboro. They're going to be telling us what a great job they're doing. At Greenville. I'm sorry, Greenville. What did I say? Greenville at ECU. And I'm hoping to go and have an opportunity to meet Ms. Hogshead and try to persuade her to come and schedule time in Bertie County so that we can talk about these things. So we've had, CDBG is $1 million? Or is it 700,000?
It was 777, I think, was the original amount. But the idea was that as they identified units, if you went over that number, they were going to give you the more money necessary to do those units. So the issue for steps 6 through 8 there would be, they're doing all the eligibility and environmental review and all that kind of stuff, but the actual, construction end, down at the local level would be done at the local level, not with the state, sending people that don't know nothing about the area to come in and do that. So
we're trying to find local contractors. We're trying to find contractors that have done this in the past.
We're going to be in the middle of it with the other projects anyway. You mentioned where we are, how far along. We've spent over $3 million to date so far.
Out of the six.
Out of the six plus, other programs. So we're about halfway there. The state has been slow in the reimbursement process. In some cases, we have a grant system where we're going in there and uploading things and sometimes it's 68 days until get the money back, 78 days. In one case, it was like 92 days.
William's got some experience with that.
Yeah.
EMS project.
And apparently, this is going to sound really bad, but apparently what I heard through the grapevine was the state treasurer's office was not prepared for the request. They were not prepared to spend that kind of money once Windsor hit them, Bertie County hit them. Other places started hitting them with the same requests, and they had obligated $100 million, but they didn't realize that they were going to have to, over the summer, spend 25 of it. So the state wasn't prepared for that. So I think there's a lot of things up in Raleigh that we're trying to push them along.
Scott, those three projects you're talking about, Ms. Hogshead, those are new projects?
No, they were, I think, actually on the list.
Those are probably houses that we know about, but we just don't know which ones.
We don't know which ones.
Yeah, but not new something.
Yeah, these were projects that he did all the legwork on.
Right.
Okay.
And they're magically telling us they're now approved, but they've yet to identify where they're at and whose they are.
So that is holding us up a little bit because until we know who is going to be assisted through that program, it's hard to fill in the gaps on the other programs. So we don't want to go out and start doing somebody that is going to get assisted through that program. Technically, we're not supposed to because that's federally funded. The state doesn't want to use their money but they want to use the federal money. They want to use the state money on somebody that's not federally eligible.
What do you think? That's crazy. What are the projects that we pulled out, Chris, that and paperwork has been done for you guys, but the Mideast had the money, but the cap was $40,000, right? Mm-hmm. So the first appraisals of the work, one came in at $37,500. Great. But once Florence hit, that contractor jumped and went down to New Bern, so they had to bring in a new contractor. Now it's 8 months later, and the house is in worse shape. Now it's $47,700 above the threshold. And this person's now waited 2 years almost. But luckily, through, I guess, Sally Surface credit, we went to Cater and said, if you can agree to fund $7,700 of that work, that, you know, we'll be able to go and spend the other $40,000, which was originally, and they said yes. So, and one of them was in, it needed a new heating system.
Right.
And so it looks like it's going to go forward with that. Yeah. This person waited 2 years and would have been out. Yeah. It's crazy.
So I've got one other thing, piece of news for the board. After Hurricane Florence hit, we resubmitted the unmet needs from Matthew. So that's approximately 50 structures. 27, 28 of those were non-residential structures, commercial or something like that. And just as a flyer, you know, we knew that we didn't have Florence flooding here, but we knew we had unmet needs from Matthew. So the state has agreed to submit the properties to FEMA for potential funding. And we're in the process of prioritization of those. And we've got to pull together some additional information. I actually, Tracy, your planner, helped me out last week, providing some documentation. We're in our discussions. Jody's work in the tax office with documenting every flood on the tax cards, I think, is going to be very beneficial for us in this application. So, but basically, the properties are going to go in and they're going to have to do a benefit cost analysis on all the properties. And if the benefit cost analysis says that you know, FEMA can fund them, then we may be able to get some funding for some of those properties.
Well, let me ask you a question real quick. When we had Tropical Storm Julia, and then 12 days later we had Matthew, even though Julia was not a federally recognized storm, okay, we had people from FEMA come and sit down with us. And Ron, I think you were there with me, and they had this map on the wall, okay? And of course, the parts of Windsor that were flooded, but also Long Branch, which was an area in over in Colerain, and it flooded from the front because the amount of rain filled their overflow pond that they have out there that the town put in and flooded the whole neighborhood. Okay, they actually had to get boats in there midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning to pick this up. Now they had designated that as a flood area, and those houses there are going to keep on flooding because of that situation. Now, they were talking about doing something at that time. Have you heard anything in reference to that? Could any of this be brought into this picture? There's a neighborhood of about 25, 30 homes in there.
Yeah, I had heard about some Colerain issues. I don't know that we got any applications when we took the Matthew applications from that area. You know, I was obviously out there to apply. I think that would have been the time, and since that time we have been using the same list of applications that we had. So I don't know, unless they get that area, that happens again out there. The interesting thing about the Julia scenario is if we hadn't had Matthew, we wouldn't have seen any assistance, or it would have been negligible.
You're right.
So it's because of that presidential declaration that we can get assistance. Now, this whole Florence thing may be a blessing in disguise, because you had another presidential declaration. You know, even though you didn't have damage, you could kind of make up for some of the Julia stuff.
The reason I'm bringing this up now, because that would be an ideal area that's outside that did have significant damage, undercarriage, the whole nine yards, that it's going to eventually happen again. It's not going to be something that's not going to happen.
So. Would there be funds for prevention? Like I've got a project in the Long Branch community for digging out the ditches and hoping to help them not flood again. And we're waiting on our grant application and waiting for the budget to pass for the other half of the money, but would that be?
I would say, I would say that may be a FMA type project, which is a flood mitigation assistance project. If there's an infrastructure issue that can be dealt with out there to alleviate the problem, there could be something out there from a that the county could apply for that particular area. They are going to be taking applications for 2019 FMA. We have a handful of houses, like four or five, that we were talking about including in that. But they also take residential or structural type requests, but they also take infrastructure requests. So. It may be something to look at. The only problem with that, with going through FMA, or really even if you were going with a presidential declaration, is you've got to have a project. You know, the engineer has to have drawn it up. It's got to be something that's ready to go, ready to fund. And it's not, you know, you're not starting from scratch.
That's what David Hodges, you probably have.
Yeah,
it's not engineered, but it's
the family. Yeah, so it's got to at least be written up, but then it's got to be able to move forward to a PER type situation.
Do you have the existing projects that you're recommending in the next FMA? Do you know the existing ones, areas?
So FMA properties will come off the repetitive loss list, which is sent by the National Flood Insurance Program. So we discovered a few properties that had not applied for the Matthew application that were on that list. So we're going to reach out to them and see if we can elevate. I know there's one on Governor's Road that can be elevated. There's one down here on the river that can be elevated. So that's the type of FMA assistance.
I always get asked about that area on 17. You know, before you get to Mike Pierce's house, the roads that run off, mostly trailers, that get flooded all the time, two or three times. Not from early, just regular heavy rains. And but I'm not sure they ever had any way to go and apply.
And that may be more of an FMA-type infrastructure as well, you know. But the county's kind of needs to go ahead and identify that area and then start the engineering work to figure out what needs to be done before you can apply for the funding, because they're just going to come back and say, well, how do we know if we fund this that you're actually going to do?
Some of that has been done. It was that White Oak study of White Oak that's been done way back even before I became a commissioner. That's been a historic area that's flooded all the time. A White Oak would know about it for sure.
And they called it the White Oak State?
Yes, the White Oak State. Because White Oak is like a bowl, and that water was designed to run to the highway, to run to 17. Mm-hmm. But there's so much water coming out of there that it can't handle it on 17. So it backs up on those side streets. And Pierce's house is kind of the end of that. But when you go up, that next maybe 300 yards, 400 yards, all of those little side roads, the trailers. They get flooded all the time.
The other thing to do with that is after Florence, especially in southeastern North Carolina, there's been a huge push by a number of municipalities, a number of the counties in the state, for the state to, you know, kind of once and for all take storm drainage seriously. Because they fund water, they fund sewer, but they don't fund storm drainage, and then they just kind of tell everybody, well, you overdeveloped. But That's not the case here. We know that. So it's, you know, I think that's a, that's just an easy excuse for them to say they don't want to pay for it. But I do think that they are actually looking at it now because they're realizing that, you know, when you see a shot of I-40 that, and it looks like a river, that obviously there's some water issues that we need to deal with. So, but so that may help if the state actually gets into the, a little bit more of the storm drainage business, because that you might consider that more of a storm drainage issue. There may be something that engineering wise can be done to alleviate that problem.
Well, I think when you look at the study, they already determined what could be done, but there was no money to do it. They wanted to, instead of having the road drain to 17, it was going to drain to White Oak Road, which is now Pleasant Oak Church Road. Because there's no homes there, the ditching, they got wide ditching already there that can handle the water. You just can't handle on 17, it backs up. We've had the interstate, I mean, the 17 blocked twice. I mean, that's a tragic problem.
So there's a lot of places in the state that are outside the floodplain.
Right.
That's what storm drainage projects would help with. They're outside the floodplain, and maybe they just need to be the geography needs to be changed in that to help alleviate that. So, but this Florence application is going to be going in the next couple of weeks.
Let me ask about the unmet needs. Toby's Lane, is that?
They're all in there.
Okay.
They're all in there, yeah. Okay. So
that'd really be great if we could make some progress on that too.
We'll see. I mean,
did
it depends on
commercial.
Depends on how the numbers come out. They're going to run the numbers.
How about the commercial?
Same thing.
Okay.
The commercial are also part of that. Now, some of the commercials are very, very high dollar properties.
Can you remind the board who the commercial projects are, roughly?
Well, I mean, I went through some of this the other day and was kind of looking at some of the numbers. Tax values. Some of these properties have tax values at, you know, $250,000.
Can you give us the names?
566. I have them by address. So you mean the non-residential properties,
yeah,
you're talking,
mm-hmm,
about? We've got.
Because didn't you submit the library?
Yeah, I'll just read through these so that,
okay,
I'm not cherry picking.
Okay.
We've got the both attorneys' office over off Dundee, both of them, the old one and Gillum's office. Well, and I when I went through this, I put the amount of water.
Yeah, how'd you get first on the list?
Conflict.
We've got a number of structures near Bun's Barbecue. Those structures there, mm-hmm, including Hammerheads and the garage right there, and then the building across the street. Which is the large warehouse across the street. We've got a couple of warehouses there, at Timberland's, old warehouses. We've got Randy Cherry's two properties, right over there. There's the florist property on Camden, yes. And she is on repetitive loss list, so if she can wait long enough, we'll get to her at some point.
What about the post office?
The post office didn't apply. I gave an application to the postmaster, and they did not give me an application back. So,
that's so cool. I think the bill out there we were putting up the corporate extensions.
We have there's an older a brick church out on King Street, mm-hmm, on the left side. There's
Pastor Gillum's church.
Yeah. There's Edgewood Baptist. Mayor Hoggard, his building.
Conflict.
Well, we talk about contract. Bertie County has two buildings on here. And the town of Windsor has two buildings on here.
We're shocked on that.
So, and then in the Dameron property, which is out on King Street too, they threw that out of the last list because they said it was too commercial. Even though he lives there too. They said it was too commercial for
him. What was it again? What property?
Dameron's property.
Yeah, he had the Heritage House.
Yeah, but you know that's shame. He doesn't have any commercial activity out of there now.
Yeah. So they said it was too commercial. That's pretty much what.
Well, again, I think we all need to appreciate the effort that they're doing. They're trying to push these unmet needs everywhere they can to see if we can get a bite of the apple.
I think we'll get something out of this. I don't know how much, but I think we'll get something out of this. So we feel pretty good about that right now, and we'll keep trying to hit it through FMA, like repetitive loss type situation. You know, we'll try to start applying for those coming up as well. Is there any questions?
You'll be at the meeting tomorrow, right?
I'll be in Greenville tomorrow, yeah. Yes. But I'm going to let you do all the talking.
All right, Scott, can you do other items?
Real quick, we're going to be together a week from today for a regular board meeting. Mm-hmm. No, I thought I sent these out. Well, you need to take that to the last one. Oh, this is just a preview. The package will be going out Thursday electronically. We're going to be queued up to talk about, among other things, the impassable roads. And I believe Esquire Cliff is covering that particular meeting, so if there are...
Yeah, Lloyd and I are going to be in Raleigh for a trial that we have, so close to that. I give it a heads up, he's pulling out the old letter that we drafted, drafted.
The second page of this handout is the list of the priority roads that have been identified by EMS and the sheriff and Tracy, and the ones highlighted in red are the ones that we would propose that we start communicating with written correspondence.
Well, I thought the ordinance said if someone came to us.
Well, it either a complaint or the one that we initiated through the public safety office.
You'll just write it for them if you call.
Have we had any complaints?
Yes.
Yes.
In fact, Commissioner Wester's lady that talks to me every time I go through the drive through the Pittman's and says, Commissioner Wester has promised me, I've told this to her this week. So I said, this is from Commissioner Wester.
Well, that could be said, but she's not red, though.
Yeah, and she noted that.
I got numerous phone calls. I gave them numerous phone calls, and I directed them straight to the county manager for him to have somebody go look at. That's what
I've been doing. Ted Cherry Lane is clearly a frequent flyer. I probably get more calls from residents up there than any other. We had a spell where it was kind of dry, and I think that squelched some of the calls. But after the heavy rains, it just worsens again.
People start to worry, Scott, that when is the program and when we get it done right away. Mm-hmm. That's what they're really worried about. Mm-hmm. So I want you to do that.
Yeah, we get it right away. That's good for a legal process.
Again, we're hopeful that
they're hopeful that the owners will take action because of this. I think they will do.
Well, hopefully, if they get that letter and puts the fear in them, that fear factor will motivate them.
And again, it doesn't fall back in our laps. I mean, the judge will make it, if it gets that far, of course. The judge, at that time,
so we're only sending those to the major, or are we sending this to the owner?
Well, I think that's something we need to determine at the meeting next week, and if he wants to send them to the major and the moderate, we can do that too.
I think we should. I mean,
you just go ahead and
they
just
send to the whole list. I mean, why not the whole list?
Well, is everybody on
this?
Is everybody on this in violation of the ordinance?
The worst or the major? The major are the ones I would call the ones in. Well, we will have folks there. Mitch is my go-to guy on this. If his truck can't get through, because that's the test. It has to be a piece of emergency equipment that can't get through.
And that was my question when we went. Well, everybody gets a letter. Does everybody violate the ordinance?
Well, the exactly. ones in red are.
Exactly.
And I would say
and that's the only ones we sent.
Right.
Exactly.
You don't get a Pierce Lane? Is it violation?
I have not been down Pierce Lane.
I've been down Pierce Lane. It's not.
Ron,
you go down to Pierce Lane.
Thompson is bad.
I wouldn't drive my truck down there.
Thompson's bad, but Pierce Lane is not.
It's all the same one.
No.
No, it's 10. Look at it. They got Thompson Pierce as one project.
Thompson Lane is moderate, and Pierce Lane is green. Moderate.
No, it's red. Thompson Lane, Pierce Lane, moderate. All the way across.
Well, Sam, Pierce Lane would intersect.
Yeah, that's the part that needs to be fixed.
And we'll have staff ready to.
Maybe they need to go back there and look at those ones that are in red and determine. I think the ones in red we definitely
saw.
As far as the ones that are, and send them back out there to look at the moderates. And the minors, I don't think there's any reason to send out there. The ones, of course, but the red is a definite send. You all agree with that? You agree with that?
I think it needs to be determined whether the problem caused to believe whether or not they're in violation. If they are, they need a letter. If they're not, then they don't.
Well, that's the reason they're in red, I assume. They're major problems, okay?
I think you just rank them in the order of groupings. But I don't think any determination per se has been made. Are you in violation? I mean, obviously, I think the red one's out. I also believe that so again, it's the one moderate.
Well, we'll have the
well, I missed that part. You said the red. What would you say?
I think the red, obviously. Are.
Of course, and that's right. What I'm saying, okay? Get those out there. And then they need to go back and look at the moderates again and check it out.
Thomasville, if it's rained, it would be in violation. If it hasn't rained, it would not be in violation. I mean, and that's, so whatever day they went out and made this list is could be a determining factor. Because it's just got a big hole at the beginning of the lane. And then
down at the intersection with Pierce and Thomasville,
that's where that big hole
area,
is.
Yeah, but you can't even, people are going around into neighbors' yards to prevent going through them.
If it's rained, it's bad. I've been down there dry and wet.
The chassis of the vehicle, right?
Cigarette.
But the test is whether the chassis of the vehicle
has to be an emergency vehicle.
That, if that's the test, right. Gotta fail. Dry over it. When the hole is still open.
That's the way it reads, is whether it's dry or wet.
You're exactly right. You're right. That is how it reads.
Well, our folks will be ready to
discuss that. That's how it's written.
But I agree with Greg, if it's in violation of the ordinance, then they need a letter. If not,
just a matter of this ain't too cool to not be better.
We don't need to get in.
That's right.
That's right.
Somebody else's business if they're not in violation.
That's exactly right. And so it's all consensus the red means you ain't get letters now, correct?
If they're in violation.
I would say those who are in violation need to get a letter, whether that's red, yellow or whatever.
Well, which manager, the ones that are read in violation?
I'm not prepared. I'm saying this is on the agenda for next Tuesday. I'm going to have the experts there.
Well, then you have the experts there so we can find out.
My guess is the red ones are the hot ones that we need to go at.
The hot ones.
I'm just flagging it so that everybody's.
And I don't know that it even needs to be any different. I don't know it needs to be one category here. If they're in violation, they either are or they are.
I like that.
You know, and that's all there is.
Well, again, I think everybody will appreciate hearing that guidance next week. I mean, it's just, sure this is all new. It's just when the people call and you have to tell them, lady, you're in the green zone and you don't deserve any help. This is our first crack at it.
It's a learning curve.
It is for all of us.
I'm sort of having to guess, too, because that's going to be mentioned and John and Holly are going to be able to tell us, but I would think that if it's got a color on it, it's in violation.
It's on the red.
Meaning, no, I'm talking about any color.
Yes, yeah.
Why would they even put moderate? Why would they even put moderate if it wasn't moderately in violation? I mean, then it wasn't dragging a little bit. I mean, because it either drags or doesn't.
Well, then it should be a red, because it means it needs to be fixed.
It needs to all be red.
That's how I look at it.
Well, no, could do them all. Which ones do we do
first? Yeah, prioritizing, that's all.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're doing, which we haven't got that definition yet, I don't think, have we? But my thing is that...
That is what you said. If they're in violation, they let it shoot.
They can tell us all which colors of the wire in violation.
That's not being white.
You just need to get with it. And full transparency, yes, all the red is in my neck of the woods, and I did not have anything to do with the rest. Okay, so that's any other business?
That was all I wanted to fly up today.
I've got one
good thing, and I'll let you be dressed at some point. You know, the water quality in the Chihuahua River and the Alamal Time, I guess, is very important to Jersey County. I can't get a straight answer on the cause of the problem or possible solution to it. Has anybody gotten a straight answer on
it? Is that on the algae?
Right.
Yes. Steve attended that meeting Saturday.
I'm going to tell you exactly what a man summarized from Arrowhead Beach. And it was, I told Scott yesterday morning, it was about the best summary I had ever heard. At the end, he said, so what y'all have really stood here and told us today is we had this same problem in the 70s. We don't have any data from the 70s to know what it was. And it's not something that's just popped up. And you don't have any idea how you're going to fix it. Is that correct? And they all stood there kind of like, well, yeah. And what he was trying to tell them was, he said, you know, we've got the algae, and of course, Arrowhead Beach has probably been the worst spot this past couple of years. But if you put the chemical out that will help disperse the algae, then the toxins go to the bottom where the fish are feeding.
What's causing the algae?
They don't know. They don't really don't know. I mean, if they did, they sure didn't tell it.
Or share with them the comment about the farmers.
Oh, yeah, and then all of a sudden somebody wanted to talk about, and this happened to be somebody from Berkey County that said, I lived here 30 years ago, and I left and I came back, and now I've noticed all the farms, you know, you cut the ditch banks, and you kill everything so that when the water's running off the fields, it's running directly into a ditch. You're digging more ditches so that water can get out to the rivers and sounds quicker. And John Layton, who's a friend of mine, he stood and told that man pretty quick. He said, you can't blame the farmers for this. He said, we have to go through more regulations now than we have ever been through before in our lives. He said, there are people looking at everything that we are putting on our farms now, and you know, we're getting fees and fines and all this other stuff for not being good farms. And he said, so it's financially better for us if we do it like we're supposed to do.
Well, if they end up calling down to Florida talking to somebody at Okeechobee or Okeechobee Lake, several different times when I was living in there, serious fish kills in the lake, it came from wash off from the cattle pastures going into the lake. And it was determined that it was feces and everything else that was going in there and creating the algae. That's right.
They never came up with a solution of what's called an interior. And they had everybody from NC State. I mean, the whole place was red.
It's just hard to imagine that they can't be figured out. And if you look at the Noose River when they came up with the fecal matter issue, they had a Noose sewer plant that feeds right into that. That's some of the gray water that's feeding in there. How'd the fecal matter get in there? It had to come from the sewer plant with gray water, which means there was a treatment process that didn't work somewhere on that line.
Well, I remember very well in the mid to late 70s how it was on that river. I mean, I've been skiing that river all my life. And you get along, all of a sudden it was just that thick. And everybody kept saying it was farmers' chemical and it was the plant in Franklin and the dye plant over the Joann side.
Wasn't there a fertilizer plant over there too somewhere?
There wasn't a fertilizer plant on the Joann side. It was up the river in Hertford County.
Mm-hmm. Didn't they catch him dumping into the river or something? Yeah. I mean, I've heard some of the river. They would let the water go once a year. I was young enough. I knew it was happening, but I didn't know what called it. But it would be black. It would be just like coffee. Yep. You remember that when you come down? Mm-hmm. And if you could see a line coming down the river, I mean, the whole river would be, you know, one day it would be cold rain, the next day it would be at the same bridge. It was
are you serious?
Yep.
But they would do the same thing in Franklin.
Really? Yeah. What?
They would flush Franklin about once a year. Mm-hmm. The old mill up there. Mm-hmm.
Franklin.
Yep.
Anything else, Mr. Manager?
Depends on how long you want to stay.
We're not going to stay that long.
Well, then I'm going to hit you with one on behalf of the finance officer because he's fixing to have the new auditor come in. And the auditors are going to look for things. They're going to look for consistencies. They're going to look for how we apply our activities to either the state law or board direction. And I want to take you back to April of 2017. We had had a work session, I think in this room, talking about the myriad of requests that the county was receiving for money for festivals, sponsorships for school programs, and there was concern that we needed some kind of policy, some kind of approach. And according to the minutes, there was a motion made to put a freeze in place that will allow no new donation requests to be submitted outside the budget cycle, and the current donation levels for these special events be capped and secured in place based on the donation amounts given in the most recent budget year. And that motion passed. It was 4-1. We now have an itemized list in the financials so that you know anybody can go online and see all that stuff. But we've had a couple of things come up just in the last month. One was on the last agenda for Miss Laurie Cherry in the West Roanoke Missionary Baptist. They're doing their first ever event, and they asked for a sponsorship. It was approved. And then most recently we had a request from the Greater Winds Chapel for an event they've got going on, and there was, you know, we circulated that request to the board. There was a majority in favor that responded, and we need to know how to treat the directive we were given. And I guess we can always say the board can always modify its opinion, but William just didn't want, when the auditors come to town and ask, well, why did you write a check for this, especially if it's for a church, you know, that we can go back and say this matter was taken to the board approved it, even though it wasn't itemized initially in the budget. And you know, maybe we just need a pot of money that is there when these special requests come up, because you know, we tried to hold ourselves to a line item detail, but you know, things do come up. I mean,
but was there not a kind of a out to that list?
He's trying to say
the ones that
well, that's what I'm trying to find.
And you know, we did not rule out any exceptions. Did we say only those and nothing?
I thought we did.
You said only the ones that were funded will be funded going forward. Because I remember asking the question, suppose somebody else comes up and says, can I be added to the list? And the consensus was what we have now is what we're going to go with.
Forever, but
it was basically said during the budget cycle, if it come up at budget time and y'all want to discuss it, you would be adding it to it. But this is not a budget cycle.
And it says no new donation requests to be submitted outside the budget cycle.
And that's what I brought to him.
So
I wanted clarification.
Like to at least be able to say to the auditors that this issue has been addressed, that the board acknowledges that there are adjustments and changes throughout the year, so that no one thinks we're purposely violating a directive the board gave us.
Well, do we want to alter this by saying if we propose it to a vote, then it can be altered? Do we want to say something like that?
Then you open yourself up to a little bit of everybody coming to you.
Well, that's true too. That's true too.
I mean, if they don't ever reach the meeting, if they're told straight from the get-go, we have a directive from the commissioners that this, that we not accept anymore, then it's, then we ain't got to worry about it.
See, I thought what you meant by outside of the budget cycle was the budget is for that period of time, right? That 1 year. So these are the ones that we're funding in that year. And if something came up in the new budget cycle,
again, this was 2 years ago. Yeah.
Right.
But, and that's also the reason I was given the directive to try to list them line items so that when we'd done a budget cycle, you would know what was funded.
Right. At least in the past.
Yeah, right. in the past.
Right. So those new things did not come up in time to get into this budget, right? I mean,
But like Winds Grove is going to be coming in, they're going to come back next year because we gave this year. And I mean, I voted yes for it because I've been there and seen it and see the good that it does.
But of course, if y'all give us directive, I'm just trying to get clarification because I'm sitting here scared.
Well, you can't answer the questions. I mean, when they ask, we'll
yeah.
It's a hard thing to handle.
And it's not just churches. I mean, we have towns that have events. We have any number of.
You have to go back to what tax dollars are supposed to be used for.
But could we go back to process when we do the budget for that upcoming year? We decide what we're going to fund in that year. Mm-hmm. So you get another look at it every year, and we can say how much money we're going to spend. And then we prioritize those that go in.
In other words, the ones that are already in the budget already, and then put a pot of money there, is that what you're saying? And say, okay,
just, we just get two outside of the budget.
We're going to put $10,000 in so there for donations.
We want to know, do we bring any more forth?
Did you hear what I said?
Yeah, I did. Personally, I like the idea that at the budget time, we say, how much money can we afford to spend?
Mm-hmm.
And then we identify those agencies or whatever, they're going to get funded. Next year, you do the same thing every year. It's hard to come back and add others and not add some, right? I mean, that, you get it.
Well, so far, we've been consistent. We've added everyone that came.
Well,
and I'm glad we're having this discussion because it was Commissioner Trent that made the motion and Commissioner Wesson that seconded the motion. So we need to clarify what the intent was. And again, I think it's important to measure this and gauge this. And
well, what if we had some money in the next budgetary session that we would put there for other something? I mean, I'm just throwing things out there.
I like addressing it every year at budget time and agreeing. And you can say to every, we have X amount of money we're going to spend in this year. You give it. You want it to consider your Winds Grove or Winds Grove.
So are you saying from now till next budget cycle that they should not be sending us any more requests? They
correct.
Just tell the requester, wait till budget.
You do it once a year.
So I'm with you on
that. Because if you go outside of that, you really don't have a room.
I'm with you.
And this kind of comes back to the reason I asked the question, because on the agenda I saw what y'all voted and I'm going, wait a minute. And then I saw the email and I went to Scott and said,
how about the ones that have been let go and done? You still got to answer their question. Has there any been sent out there? Yes, there has been.
The new ones that y'all voted on, I have not released any money yet.
Okay.
Because I want a clarification. Because I was after clarification on what was going on.
See, there's catch-22 right there. They've been voted on.
But at least we can show the auditors we've had this conversation and it's not going to happen again.
And hence the reason I wanted him to bring it up in this.
Right. But you like the idea of every year we address it saying, who are we going to fund this year?
Sticking with the original set of folks we were going to give to, and I like to dwindle that list, but we can't talk about it at budget.
You're the same people over and over.
Yeah, you should be able to do that. Yeah, you should be able to look at what are those that are priority for this year. Give it to those. Some of those drop off, some of them stay on every year, maybe. But you've got to address it every year.
I would be more inclined to not give it to the people that got it last year, give it to the people that haven't gotten anything. Just off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But we could go.
I mean, at least we could. It would be a
some people
discussion.
Say whatever you need it, but some don't.
Okay. Are you not clear on this now?
Well, I want to know what the minutes are going to reflect. The minutes will reflect we discussed it, and there was consensus
that no request for the pumping horse.
We will not be bringing forth additional community requests.
In this budget, sir. Okay.
But we will honor the two they voted on before this meeting.
You know what, guys?
Do
they
know that we have voted? Two folks.
Well, put it this way, the meeting on August 5th, when you voted on the West Verona Missionary Baptist Association, that was on the agenda, voted on in a public meeting, and is reflected in the minutes. The other one was in one of those circulated FYI emails.
That was just an email. The one on West Road, their treasurer was there at that meeting.
Okay. And he was there.
That's where I'm going.
Now, Scott, why didn't you remind us of all this from 2017, 2 years ago?
Because he was retired.
Somebody had to do some research.
Okay, so nobody could remember.
Well, it was really interesting to go back and see just how far.
I remembered it was questioned, but I just couldn't remember exactly what was decided and when it was decided. So I had to go back to the minutes.
I thought it was a discretion. These are the ones that funded, but we were still open to consider other
technology.
I didn't
know
what
you
did. You
didn't
know how much I was going to get blamed on you after you leave. Well, yeah, and a lot of it, I do. Because I want to have these discussions in full disclosure for Mr. Bond.
So you're trying to be transparent.
And protection for Mr. Robinson. Because they're all going to be saying, well, yeah, the manager said put it on the agenda.
You know what, guys? It could have been worse. I thought William had told Scott that one of our money trees had died. That's what I thought he was going to tell us. One had died.
I mean, the emails are public information, too. So I say that we go ahead and bite the bullet and write the check for both of those things.
And then...
Don't do anymore.
I agree with that because I was going to do the checks, but I want to talk to him, and he said we need to come back and get clarification from y'all. I'm going to put two new line items in the budget and show where we do these two, and they will be in the budget for next budget cycle to be discussed in the future.
Okay.
So I just wanted clarification because if the auditor goes back and reads the minutes or whatever, he's going
to
find a question.
Right, as a board, to make an exception.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And I said a few minutes ago.
Yeah. Right.
We decided to add two more.
Ron, that's what I said a few minutes ago.
But
I just made a motion to add two more.
But that's the reason I want a clarification on record saying that the board chose to do this.
That's right.
So would it make it more if we could vote?
I think you should.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we voting on?
I made the motion that we decided to add two more to the list that we're funding in this budget cycle. These two.
Oh, just
for
this.
Just for
this. Should there be a reason in the motion?
Because they are worthy of.
Because the Holy Spirit moved us.
I mean, I'm just thinking about somebody else. Come and say, well, you add those two, why can't you add me?
Well,
and that's why I wanted.
Well, add to your motion that this will be.
Just come see us next year.
Yeah. You getting this?
I have a motion.
Just made, that we approve these. We make two additions to that policy to add West Verona Association and Amlin's Grove funding.
Is there a second?
And that there won't be any additional.
I'm only adding two. I'm only going to add two.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor? Okay. Let's move on.
I got one more since we're doing so good with this. Yeah, it's a trip down memory lane.
Let's go back to 2014?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
May go back
The General Assembly in 2014.
You're serious?
Yes. Yes. It says during, I'm looking at a letter from Dan Falwell, the state treasurer. And this is a letter that William receives every month. During the 2014 General Assembly session, contribution-based benefit cap legislation was enacted effective January 1, 2015. The legislation was created to control the practice of pension spiking. And what had happened, it was really school superintendents that got us into this mess. When a school board would sign a contract with a superintendent, they had these unbelievable golden parachutes. And those golden parachutes would run up the the final payment to that superintendent, that would run up the highest 4 years of their wages and then dramatically push their future benefits beyond what the superintendent paid in or their Board of Education or county. And after a couple of these got flagged, they realized that the state has a formula. They realized in several of these cases, the superintendent was drawing a greater benefit than what was put in the formula by the employer and by the employee. So they monitor these now. They have a test for them now. And we now have one employee that hits that every year when they do the test, and it's Ricky Spivey. And I'm going to take, and I had William help me find this one too. I'd sent this out to the board usually in October every year, and he found the one I sent out, but I want to take you to the minutes. In May 4th, 2015, there was a motion to increase, and we were discussing at that time the merger of Lewiston, the merger of Roxabelle, the merger of the South Windsor Water System.
And he was getting paid by
the And he was the operator in charge. It was like a part-time job for him. So with the county taking on that merger, he was going to get a reduction in his
major.
So the board voted on a 25% pay increase at that time. Well, that kicked him way up into the formula because, you know, Ricky's got a lot of years in the system, but most of the years he was getting paid at this level, but now he's getting paid up here. If he retires tomorrow, we will have a pension spiking issue come up, meaning that for his time in retirement, the county would likely be asked by the state to pay a little bit of money into. Now, William reminds me that on an actuarial basis, the longer Ricky works, the more of a catch-up he's going to make, and that with every subsequent year that he works, that liability is going to decrease. But we only have one such position in the whole county, but William gets one of these letters every month, and it always says at the back of the letter that we're duty-bound to bring this to the governing body's attention, and you know, I've done it a few times with emails, but again, for his benefit, because when this letter hits his desk, I don't want him having to explain something that I helped get y'all into and it was properly voted on, and that William gets these reminders every month. So again, it's part of our history, it's part of the board's effort to support that consolidation.
He did the right thing. He just can't
retire. Yeah, nobody's saying we didn't. It's just, but this
he just
is.
Doesn't get to retire.
But we fall into that. But we fall into the pension spiking formula, and again, it was really driven by those superintendents, and that's our story.
Well, we need to be mindful of this in the future when large raises and are given out. I mean, we could be in violation at some point. Yeah.
That's correct.
Well, is it really a violation? Or is it
no, it's not.
It's not really a violation.
No, it's not a violation. They're putting us on notice that, that his contribution and the county's contribution may not be enough based on how long he's projected to be.
But the steps are they sent to me to notify you.
Back in 2015 and 16 also, so this is a repeat of the thing.
And we did the right thing because Ricky, even with the raise we gave him, lost money. Even with the rate he gets, because he was getting, I know exactly how much he was getting for each of those municipalities. You added that up, and that was larger than the raise we gave him. So.
Okay. What else you got?
We are kind of on the roll.
Right. Let's just move a little quick.
I don't think that anything for Tim.
Well, that's a spot.
Right. That's a spot.
So we are meeting again
on the 3rd,
and then we're meeting again on the 16th, and then remember on the 17th we've got folks going to Boone for Andy Wilson's oath of office for the state association. When we meet on the 16th, we'll be, oh boy. we're going to have 12 glass of water follow-up, hopefully with new information about the easements and stuff. I'll make sure Johnson's with me. A review of the land transfer and acquisition agreement for those acres we've purchased from the Kashai Golf and Country Club property. There's been some complications in that transaction, and I think between Jody and Jonathan, they can best explain the whole thing, but we need to sew that thing up. It's been almost 2 years since we started that effort to make that work so we can have that Martin Community College fire training facility. But because we were acquiring property, splitting property, or subdividing property and transferring property, it was a quilt work of legal work and not zoning, but subdivision work for Jonathan and Tracy. Mitch is going to come to us with some proposed revisions to the ambulance franchise ordinance. I hope that we have an animal shelter project update, because we've got some folks in the Humane Society and our animal control officers really hoping we do that. I sent out a note the other day, the landfill post agreement. Apparently when the board took action last October, there was only a 1 year extension on that. You amended the franchise ordinance, but the host agreement was only 1 year. They're asking for 2 more years. They do not have their permit application completed yet to send in. So that's just a renewal, no change in terms. And again, I just think it's good that we get this stuff cleaned up while we can. So,
you done? Everything else?
This is all for the 16th, right?
That's for the 16th, yeah. So I'm doing my best to spend prayer time every morning with Mr. Vaughn to get him up to speed. Sometimes those sessions are longer than others. Sometimes his eyes go, but he always keeps a good sense of humor, and he comes back every day and brings a lot of enthusiasm and positive energy to it. So, and again, if you see William or me go crazy next week, it's because the auditors are here, and we're going to do our best to not cause any delays. We were really ready last year, and it still didn't work.
You good?
I feel good. I'm glad we got those two out of the way.
You got anything else going? Thanks, sir. I appreciate that, sir. I deeply appreciate it. Have a motion to adjourn. So moved. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
There was a mention of a bid bond.
Yeah.